How about the N-word, Bell? The N-word's been thrown around.
Black guys use it all the time. Turn on HBO, listen to a black comic, and all you hear is nigger, nigger, nigger. I don't get it. If anybody without enough melanin says it, it's a horrible thing. But when black people say it, it's affectionate. It's very confusing. Don't hang up. I want to talk to you some more. Don't go away.
Is it okay to say that word? Is it ever okay to say that word?
It depends how it's said. Black guys talking to each other seem to think it's okay.
But you're not black. They're not black.
Oh, I see. So a word is restricted to race. Got it. Can't do much about that.
I can't believe someone like you is on the radio screwing up the nigger word, and I hope everybody
I didn't spew out the nigger word.
Nigger, nigger.
Right. I said that's what you hear.
Heard it.
Yes, they did.
I hope everybody heard it. So
they did, and I'll say it again.
Got all the Vietnamese in the army camps and shit, taking tests and stuff, learning how to say nigger.
It's the nigger.
So they can become good citizens.
Nigger, nigger, nigger.
Right, they got classes, you know they have. All right, let's try again, Trope. Nigger, nigger, nigger. Nigger, 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 nigger. Well, that's close.
We don't care when Richard Pryor or Eddie Murphy say it. Why? Because we know they're not racist. They're niggers!
I thought the word nigger the other day. I'm going to tell you this story. And it wasn't racist. There wasn't a race even connotation. Let me tell you what happened. I went to a coffee place. And it was a cool indie coffee. I don't like Starbucks anymore. Because you go there and they don't care anymore. They just press a button and some old lady's diarrhea comes out and they just give it to you. So I go to like a young people cool coffee place. With like my band's playing notices on the walls. And it's called like the Howling Do whatever thing. And the dude behind the counter's got a tight t-shirt and a ponytail. And he's like, oh, so good. And I was like, hey, can I get a cappuccino? And he's like, he's amazed that he could help me. Like, oh, yeah, I got all this stuff right here. That's awesome. And so he starts making my coffee just so. He worked so hard. He ground the beans just for that one cup. And put him in the thing and tamped them with his old thing and he'd click, clack, and click, and then he took the milk and he frothed it like for like an hour. And then he banged it on the counter. I don't know why, it was awesome. And he scooped it in and put a little cocoa on it. And he said, here you go, man. And I was just blown away. And for some reason, as I left there, the thought in my head was, that nigger made the shit out of my coffee. I don't know why. He wasn't black. That's just what was in my heart for some reason. Was that nigger made the shit out of my coffee.
Nigger, nigger, nigger. I ain't trying to preach nothing over. I'm just talking about my feelings about it. And I don't want them hip white people coming to me calling me no nigger or telling me nigger jokes. I don't like it. I'm just telling you, it's uncomfortable to me. I don't like it when black people say it to me. I really don't no more. It's nothing. It don't mean nothing. So I love y'all. You take that with you.
Nigger, nigger, nigger.
You know what's on my mind right now? It ain't the coffee in my kitchen. It's the dead nigger.
Oh, Jimmy, don't even worry about it.
No, listen to me. Don't think about anything. I'm going to ask you a question. When you came pulling in, did you notice a sign out in the front of my house that said dead nigger storage?
You know I didn't see no shit.
Did you notice a sign in the front of my house that said dead nigger storage?
No.
You know why you didn't see that sign? Because it ain't there, because storing dead niggers ain't my fucking business. That's why.
I just don't mean shit. Y'all niggers, and you gon' be niggers. Forever, just like us, niggers. You're not niggers.
And the voice said, do you see any niggers? I said, no. I said, you know why? Because there aren't any. And it hit me like a shot, man. I started crying and shit. I was sitting there, I said, yeah, I've been here 3 weeks. I haven't even said it. I haven't even thought it. And it made me say, oh, my God, I've been wrong. I've been wrong. I got to regroup my shit. I mean, I said, I ain't gonna never call another black man a nigger. You know, because we never was no niggers. That's a word that's used to describe our own wretchedness. And we perpetuate it now because it's dead. That word's dead. We men and women, we come from the first people on the earth. You know, the first people on the earth were black people.
Context of white supremacy, Gus T. Renegade, Justice, and for another program to share constructive information on racism, white supremacy. We are going to get right to work. Just the fact that our guest, she's been here a lot, I hope that indicates that she has constructive information and suggestions on racism, white supremacy, things non-white people can be doing to replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Just the fact that she's on the program today, I remembered one of her previous visits to the broadcast. Check out the lineup for people who were here. The 100th broadcast, we had Dr. Baruti. The 300th broadcast, we had Dr. Welsing. 200th broadcast, our guest for today's program, co-author of Trojan Horse, Death of a Dark Nation. The website where you can get more information about the book. You can get a copy of the book and just follow up to see when the new material is going to be coming out. TrojanHorse1.com. That is the number one, TrojanHorse1.com. As I've often said, she is one of our top supporters, top investors, just in terms of investing time, resources, anything she can to help the effort here. And I definitely hope that we have been and continue to be worthy of her generosity. Know who this person is and always appreciate hearing from her. And always a pleasure to have her on the broadcast. Pam. Pam, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Good evening, Gus. Good evening, Justice.
She is not on the line at this point, but she might be hanging out a little later. I will pass along the well wishes, though. Groovy. Want to hop right to the material this evening because I feel like we have a lot to cover, and I'm excited about the program. I never thought I would read any of Mark Twain's work with enthusiasm and gusto, and I read Huckleberry Finn, which is about 430 pages. I read it in 48 hours and took notes. You get to see if I, you know, if I was reading carefully or not. Before we hop into the material, I did want to give you the opportunity, if you heard the clip that played at the beginning, if you had any thoughts, comments. If not, it's no problem because we have a lot to cover. But I did want to give you the opportunity if you had any thoughts from the opening clip.
The thing that I thought about when I was listening to it was something that, thanks to your show and that Obama conversation we had, dialogue we had a couple of weeks ago, we added something to the second book, and that was the blame game. Well, we had done the blame game, but we had not really we refined the blame game in the book. And when I heard all the conversation about, you know, all the comments from a lot of white people about nigger and how funny everybody was making it, you know, it reminded me of how white people have taken their behavior and somehow made other people responsible for it. You know, so that's what made me, that came to my mind about the word niggas. Somehow now black people are responsible for the word nigger, you know, not white people. So that was the thought I had, and it just reminded me of the whole blame game thing where the crimes of white supremacists have become the crimes of their victims. But I'm ready to get going, but that's what the thought that crossed my mind was, all this nonsense about blaming black people for the word nigger.
Yeah, I hope non-white people will keep that in mind. Number one, as it says at the top of the page, the problem is white people. They are most to blame for everything. And me reading Mark Twain helped me understand, man, it's not Nelly, It's not Chris Rock. It's not NWA. It's not Richard Pryor. I don't care if every black person in the known universe in unison chants nigger for the next 5,000 years. That is white people who are to blame for that. And the folks that we're emulating, racist man and racist woman, like Mark Twain, Huckleberry Finn, the nigger count, 213. 213. But we'll get to that. I wanted to start. I feel I have not made an explicit connection to white genetic annihilation often enough. And I am ignorant, but I have been studying and reading about racism, white supremacy for a long time, relatively speaking. And I read some Mark Twain some years ago. In fact, a white person gave me some Mark Twain. I was at a bookstore in Seattle. I was buying a book. I don't even remember why I was getting this Mark Twain book, but I had been hunting it down. And she was like, oh, you're reading Twain? That's great. White people love Mark Twain. They got his. Keep that in mind, too. White people love Mark Twain. They got his photo up. If you go to your generally, I think, Borders, Barnes & Noble, they generally have a picture of Mark Twain up. Keep that in mind. At any rate, she gave me an extra book of Twain. She was just so excited that I was there to purchase Twain. And in one of the books that I bought, he was talking about racism. These books were a collection of his essays. For anyone who's familiar with Twain, he didn't just write fiction, the Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer and all that. He wrote a lot of essays, too, and a lot of his work deals with racism. In fact, I enjoyed this so much, I strongly suspect we might do a part two on Mark Twain and do Pudd'nhead Wilson, and I won't even explain that so we don't waste time. That's for Pudd'nhead Wilson. But the book that she gave me, it had this essay where Mark Twain is talking about complexions, and it stuck with me. I don't think at the time I consciously connected it to Dr. Welsing, but reading it in 2011, I definitely did. So I want to read this so everyone can catch it, and then I want to get Pam's thoughts. Mark Twain writes, and this is in it's in the book Following the Equator. If you get that book, if you go to the library, don't purchase it, but if you go to the library, you can check it out. It's online. I think you can read the essay. If you type in Mark Twain complexions, you should get it. But the important part is right here in the description at Blog Talk Radio. Nearly all black and brown skins are beautiful, but a beautiful white skin is rare. Where dark complexions are masked, they make the whites look bleached out, unwholesome, and sometimes, frankly, ghastly. I could notice this as a boy down south in slavery, days before the war. He's talking about the Civil War. The splendid black satin skin of the South African Zulus of Durban seemed to me to come very close to perfection. The white man's complexion makes no concealments. It can't. It seemed to have been designed as a catch-all for everything that can damage it. Ladies have to paint it and powder it and cosmetic it and diet it with arsenic and enamel it and be always enticing it and persuading it and pestering it and fussing at it to make it beautiful. I would say he left out tanning, but, you know. And they do not succeed. His words, they do not succeed. But these efforts show what they think of the natural complexion as disturbed. As disturbed, it needs these helps. The complexion which they try to counterfeit is one which nature restricts to the few, to the very few, to 99 persons. She gives a bad complexion. To the hundredth, a good one. The hundredth can keep it. How long? 10 years, perhaps? The advantage is with the Zulu, I think. He starts with a beautiful complexion, and it will last him through. And as for the Indian brown, firm, smooth, blemishless, pleasant and restful to the eye, afraid of no color, harmonizing with all colors and adding a grace to them all, I think there is no sort of chance for the average white complexion against that rich and perfect tint. Mr. Mark Twain. Pam, what are your thoughts on these words from Mark Twain?
Oh, my goodness. It's the first time that I ever heard that, and it makes me think there needs to be a show about just about skin complexion. You know, the other night when one of the callers said that white supremacy was a business and basically sounded like he was kind of saying that emotion wasn't involved, you know, emotion wasn't really a part of it. And I would say emotion is a very big part of it. It's, you know, there's a certain envy that you'll find among white people collectively for non-white people, particularly black people. And I think if you could compare that to a high school where students, one student is envious of another. And what does that student do? That student tries to make the person they envy feel inferior. They try to convince other people that this person that they envy is inferior. So when you look at the whole ramification of making black people appear to be inferior and making them feel inferior, that all goes back to an inferiority complex. And that's the first thing they teach you in Psych 101 is that a superiority complex is really an inferiority complex. So if white people are just about the business of controlling and making money, then why this need to make us feel inferior? So it just brought to mind some of the things that we covered in the first book and we'll cover in the second book, and that's the beauty con game. And if you look back in history, going way back, you'll see that the standards of beauty in the ancient, so-called ancient world were totally different than they are now, before white supremacy and before white European colonization. I'll just read you this real quickly, that in the Chinese record, Nan Su Chao, and I may not be saying it right, a Chinese traveler to Southeast Asia wrote of the people, they consider black the most beautiful. I have a friend that went to visited some Tibetan monks in, I believe, southern China, and he said he was shocked. They wouldn't let him take pictures, but he was shocked that the people looked like him. They had nappy hair. See, all of these things they keep from us. All over the world, you've got statues and black Buddhas and black Madonnas, and you'll see that people in the ancient time worshiped the darkest people. The ancient Visayans of the Philippines considered flat noses and broad faces to be the most beautiful. By traditional Chinese opera conventions, a black face is considered nobler, and a white, predominantly white face indicated craftiness, deceit, and knavery. One Greek writer, Diodorus, wrote of the Ethiopians that they were the most pleasing to look at. So if you go back in all of these ancient kind of historical records, you'll see that the darkest people were often considered the most beautiful. So that just really brought up a lot of stuff. I mean, it's amazing if you really get past the white supremacy propaganda.
Context of white supremacy. I guess for folks out there, number one, keep in mind, I was speaking with Justice, and I was telling her that I was preparing for the program, and I was really looking forward to it. I felt like this will be an important program, because everyone listening should keep in mind Mark Twain, as I said, white people, racist man and racist woman seem to have a great deal of affinity for Mark Twain. If you go to Borders, Barnes & Noble, many of your local libraries and things, bookstores, he will be prominently featured. This is, you know, one of the most celebrated writers in the history of America. In fact, I'm reading directly from the cover of the book. This is The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. We come to see Huck as one of the permanent symbolic figures of fiction, not unworthy to take a place with Ulysses, Faust, Don Quixote, Don Juan, Hamlet, and other great discoveries that man has made about himself. That's what this, and I mean, this is T.S. Eliot, another revered suspected racist. I mean, white people say this is one of the greatest novels in the history of mankind. White people say this routinely. White people say this is one of the best works of fiction, Huckleberry Finn, to ever be produced in this area of the world. If you can just think, white people required most of the children who attended public school, really any form of so-called school in this area of the world, at least in the last 60 to 70 years, they have required almost every child to read this book, I'm sure. I don't know if the folks listening read it or not, but I'm quite certain you have been assigned some Mark Twain at some point in time during the existence of racism, white supremacy. And if you stay in school long enough, particularly if you do English, you're going to probably get a lot of Mark Twain. So I just want you to keep that in mind, as well as that phrase, Mr. Twain's comments about white people and them looking ghastly at what he thought about the perfect beauty of black and non-white people. Keep that in mind, that this person produced a book with the word nigger in it more than 200 times, pretty much averaging nigger every other page for the duration of a 400-plus page book. We want to hop into the material, but I guess just for people who are listening who don't know, just some of the quickies. Mark Twain, that is his pen name, real name, Samuel Langhorne Clemens. He was born November 30th, 1835. Date of death is April 21st, 1910. He's authored a ton of books, essays, all kinds of material. He was born in Florida, traveled extensively. He wrote a lot about racism, white supremacy. As I said, you know, we might do a part two with this, with Pudd'nhead Wilson and some of his essays. And Pam wanted to get to the skin complexion. So, you know, it's a lot of material. You can talk about Mark Twain and racism. The book that I read, I think Pam read The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, which was published in 1876. I read The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, which was published in 1885. Huckleberry Finn is like the part two to The Adventures of Tom Sawyer. The same characters are in it. Huckleberry Finn is, these are two white children, suspected racist children. these are two racist children, pardon me, Huck and Tom. Tom is kind of the reader, the alpha male child, if you will. And they have Jim, black male. His name is Nigger Jim. He's in, I believe, both of the books. And, yeah, just kind of to give some of the basics, and then we'll hop into the material. I kind of wanted to share when Pam was on the program and we talked about Sanford and Son. Great podcast, I thought. We started with white identification, and that is all over this book. I wanted to kind of start with a piece on that deals with white identification and kind of get Pam's thoughts, and then you can, you know, wherever you want to go from there, we'll see. This is in Huckleberry Finn, and this is the part that I'm going to first. This is on page 406. If anyone out there is reading along, I'm in Huckleberry Finn, page 406. And let's see, I want to kind of give you the context so you'll be able follow exactly what's being discussed here. Okay. So at this point, it's Huckleberry Finn, Tom Sawyer, Nigger Jim. It's almost the end of the book, and they have been, and this is a really great point. Jim thinks that he is a slave. He has run away because he thinks that his white owners, white racists, are going to sell him down south, and so he runs away. And so you get to the end of the book and find out that they've changed their mind and they have, in fact, freed him. So he's no longer a slave, in quotes. But Tom and Huck, they have been playing all these jokes on him and saying that they're going to get him free and doing all this cruel stuff. I'll try and share some of the details. But now they finally get to the part where they have freed him and they're going to let him go. And in the process, our main character here has gotten hurt, and I just want to read this and get Pam's thoughts. And again, I want people to keep in mind this book was written in it was published in 1885 in the area of the world known as the States. It was published in 1884 in England. And for anyone out there listening who is a history buff about racism, white supremacy, 1884, 1885, very important dates. System of racism, white supremacy for black people, unfortunately. So this is 406. Now, old Jim, you're a free man again, and I bet you won't ever be a slave no more. And a mighty good job it was, too, Huck. It's planned beautiful, and it is done beautiful, and they ain't nobody can get up a plan that's more mixed up and splendid than what that one was. We was all as glad as we could be, but Tom was the gladdest of all because he had a bullet in the calf of his leg. When me and Jim heard that, we didn't feel so brash as what we did before. It was hurting him considerable and bleeding. So we laid him in the wigwam and tore up one of the Duke's shirts for to bandage him. But he says, "Give me the rags. I can do it myself. Don't stop now. Don't fool around." And the evasion booming along so handsome. Man the sweeps and set her loose. Boys, we done it elegant. Deed we did. I wish we'd had the handling of Louis the 14th. There wouldn't have been no son of St. Louis ascend to heaven, wrote down in his biography. No, sir, we whipped him over the border. That's what we done with him, and done it just as slick as nothing at all. Man the sweeps, man the sweeps. But me and Jim was consulting and thinking, and after we thought a minute, I says, "Say it, Jim." So, Nigger Jim says, "Well then, this is the way it looked to me, Huck. If it was him that has been shot set free, and one of the boys was to get shot, would he say, 'Go save me, never mind about a doctor, for to save this one?' It's like that, Master Tom Sawyer. Would he say that? You bet he wouldn't. Well, then, is Jim going to say that? No, sir. I don't budge a step out of this place. Doubt a doctor. Not if it's a 40 years. I knowed he was white inside. And I reckoned he'd say what he did say. So it was all right now. And I told Tom I was going for a doctor. He raised considerable row about it. But me and Jim stuck to it and wouldn't budge. So he was crawling out and setting the raft loose, but we wouldn't let him. Then he give us a piece of his mind, but it didn't do no good." So Tom goes ahead and sits down. Nigger Jim stands watch to make sure nothing happens. The language he writes this way, he's supposed to be capturing the way people talked during this time. So that's the way it's written. I hope people were able to understand the gist of it. If you were able to understand the language, do you have thoughts on that section, Pam?
Just a real quick thought, and that was how a character is named Nigga Jim, you know, and also he was white inside.
Yeah,
he was all right inside.
I mean,
that's real white of you. I mean, I just got stuck on that, you know. I mean, this is a very difficult thing for me to get beyond the nigga gym and the, you know, just the normalcy of the whole thing, you know. I mean, the abnormal normalcy of it, you know.
I will tell you, that was something that I was hypersensitive to in reading because I don't know how many people out there have read this book. But when you're reading something where nigger is just said over and over and over, I mean, after a while, I mean, it's just like BET or anything else. You get desensitized to it. So I was really scared. Like, and my count came out to be 202. The white people's count online said 213. So, you know, I mean, you really, after a while, you just become desensitized to it. The language, I guess, for folks, it kind of takes a while for you to grasp, you know, the language and really understand it without too much confusion. What's happening in this scene, Nigger Jim, he is going to stand watch. He thinks that he's still a slave, and so he thinks white people are still after him, and it's dangerous, like they have to take all these extra precautions so that they are not seen in the daytimes because, you know, he can be caught and snatched up by any random white person. And so he's choosing to keep himself in danger, to stand guard and keep this little white racist child safe. Who's playing a joke on him the whole time? Like, you don't find this out for another couple pages, but they're just playing a joke on him the whole time, getting him to think that he is still a slave, in quotes, when he's actually been freed. So that's what's happening in that scene. And I thought it was, I mean, this is a book that came out during the 19th century, and we've still got what amounts to Man on Fire and so Washington and all these roles where you've got a black male sacrificing their life for a small white child. I mean, white people have pretty much been telling the same story for about 120 years. Is that making sense, Pam?
Yes, it is. And I was trying to remember, and I hate to even admit this, but for a very long time, especially as a child, I thought black people were honored to be befriended by white people. So even though they were calling him Nigga Jim and they were didn't seem to treat him very well, it was almost still like it was something special to have a white friend. And, you know, like you say, you get desensitized, you know. I remember just reading books and novels, and I used to read a whole lot as a kid. And a lot of the books either made you invisible or they basically let you know you were inferior. I'm talking about novels written by white people. And after a while, you just began to, it's like you accepted it. You accepted that, I guess that being a black person was something inferior. And even though you might deny it, you know, it's funny, you know, still have those feelings that come up, you know, that it almost feels abnormal to have a black person not trying to please white people. You know, so, and I was concerned about all the movies, like you mentioned, the movie, all the movies, I mean, most of the movies with black males in them, where he's not playing a criminal or a freak or a clown. Almost all the movies with serious movies, roles for black men have to do with saving, protecting, and rescuing white people. I don't know.
There's a ton of that all throughout this book. Like, the black people, I mean, I hope this comes through in the program. And again, I hope this program, you know, I hope it has some value because I suspect a high number of non-white people listening, whether you read it or not, have been assigned this book. If you have children, I strongly suspect your children will likely be assigned either this book or some of Mark Twain's work. You can really be an all-star, counter-racist in a class where they give you some Mark Twain. I mean, bam, you can take that quote right from the front page. Did Mark Twain say this? Oh, okay. what does it mean that someone, a white person, would say this and then write a book like Huckleberry Finn? And that's a totally legit question to ask in any classroom, unless I've been misinformed. Now, if it's something incorrect about asking that question in a classroom, and the more specialized, the better. So if you're in literature class, this is the place where this question should be asked. And in fact, you should get a gold star for asking a question like that. So, yeah, I want to read so that you kind of get an idea of the tone, how this book sounds, how you feel about black people reading the work of Mark Twain. I kind of want listeners that to come across and to see if you think removing the word nigger, if just taking that word out would make this okay. Keep that in mind. And I guess also think if you were going to take the word nigger out, what would you replace it with? Keep those in mind. I'll repeat those a few times as we roll. This is on page 365, and this is, again, Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn. They are talking amongst themselves. This is the joke that they're carrying out, doing all this foolishness, playing this joke with Jim, Nigger Jim. So Tom Sawyer, Huck is speaking to Tom Sawyer, and he says he's talking about a different type of knife, picks. Picks is the thing, moral or no moral. And as for me, I don't care. Shucks for the morality of it, no how. When I start in to steal a nigger or a watermelon or a Sunday school book, I ain't no ways particular how it's done. So it's done. What I want is my nigger, or what I want is my watermelon, or what I want is my Sunday school book. And if it's a pick is the handiest thing, then that's what I'm going to dig that nigger or that watermelon or that Sunday school book out with. And I don't give a dead rat what the authorities thinks about it. Another 365 and 366 of Huckleberry Finn. Just passage, lots of passages like that in the book. For me, I would ask any person who is an English teacher, literary critic, what does it mean to be comparing black people to watermelons and Sunday school Bibles? What does that mean? What is that saying? Or Sunday school book? What does that mean to be comparing a black person to these objects? I don't know. What are your thoughts? Do you have any thoughts on that passage, Pam?
Well, in answer to that question, I would say comparing black people to inanimate objects pretty much fits. I mean, we're possessions, or at the very least, subhuman. So I'm not surprised that I'm just, you know, reading some of the book, and unfortunately, the Tom Sawyer book that I had been edited, obviously, because they didn't call. I don't know if they called him Nigger Jim in Tom Sawyer to begin with. But they didn't call him that in this book, so I suspect the book I have has been cleaned up. But just the callousness and just the total disregard for black people, for their humanity, you know, it's all over the place. So I would be surprised if in that book, particularly when it was written, I'd be surprised if they had referred to black people as anything than an object. So it kind of fits.
Do you think this is being done as satire, almost like Bamboozled with Spike Lee? I don't know if folks caught that, but do you think this is being done in this way to represent how bad black people are being treated? Because that is some white people say, you know, that's that was what he was attempting to do, is to make this funny, to point out how incorrect it is to be racist and to treat black people this way. Do you think that's what he was trying to do?
Not in my opinion. I've read quite a few comments like that when I was online, you know, just trying to, you know, do a little background on Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer. And I saw, you know, I went to different websites and a couple of blogs and essays, and that seemed to be the general consensus of white people, that he was actually trying to show how wrong racism was and blah, 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 and X, Y, Z. And, you know, I'm not buying that. I just don't buy it. You know, that seems to be the common conclusion among white people collectively. They just won't own up to to racism, particularly racism from one of their, American apple pie kind of writers. Like you said, I do remember going in bookstores and seeing pictures of Mark Twain. He was almost like the standard for good, clean American literature. So I really doubt that his books would be as well revered if he was actually trying to oppose white supremacy. So, no, I don't see it as satire. Not me personally. Do you?
I mean, I'll read a passage. Are you able to understand the reading? Because I know it is a little tough trying to adjust to the language. Are you able to comprehend what's being said, or is it sounding like I'm reading Greek?
I would say it's not real clear. You know, so it's kind of hard to. I would say I'm struggling with it a little bit because I don't know. I just can't get past all the nigger juice.
It's a lot. I mean, 213. I mean, keep the, and it's chapters. It's whole chapters that are titled with nigger in the title of the chapter. You got character. I mean, I just don't know how you.
Is that satire?
I'm sorry.
Is that satire though? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm just like, I'm sorry.
I mean, the book starts, if you get it, it says, the very first page, it says, notice, and this is the author Mark Twain writing, persons attempting to find a motive in this narrative will be prosecuted. Persons attempting to find a moral in it will be banished. Persons attempting to find a plot in it will be shot. And this is the author. So, I mean, he's kind of setting it up for this to be funny to begin with, you know, so that you will hear some of this and you'll laugh. You'll think it's funny and it will call out the horror of racism. Like, that's what they say. In my opinion, reading this as a black person, number one, it didn't produce the desired result. If the result was supposed to be people were going to read this and not this racism, he gets an F like everybody else because we still have a system of white supremacy. So moving forward, if I was really going to dig specifically in on this, I would say I'll share some more. I'll share a little bit. And if people are uncomfortable, that's good. That's great because anytime I tried to get sound clips of white people saying nigger because we're in a system of white supremacy and we should be attributing all of our problems, conflict, everything, all of the pathologies that non-white people, black people have picked up, we should be attributing that to black people. We say nigger so much because white people have called us this word for so long, and now they're just trying to refine themselves and not say it anymore and fuss at other white people and Michael Richards and folks when they slip up and say it publicly. Then they want to act, you know, oh, my gosh, I can't believe he said that. And, you know, fire someone for a day. And or what Mr. Fuller says, white people do not get fired. They get transferred. Don Imus got transferred to a different station, still making money, nappy head hoes. So, yeah, I hope people are out there, are feeling uncomfortable. And 213 times. This is... on page 272 of the book, and I mean, you're about to get about 20 niggers in about a page and a half. But if you can get through that, try to follow what's happening in the story, because this is another one where you're getting racist code that has not changed in almost 150 years. It's just real explicit and raw here, which I appreciate because it just confirms a lot of what I've been thinking about white people. But this is 272. Let me make sure I give you the proper context. The white people in this book do a lot of lying and stealing. Lots of it. They look for opportunities to lie and steal in this book. And so they are in the process of lying and stealing. This is Huckleberry Finn, and he's with two older white males, and they are about to steal money from a person who just died. They're about to steal the money that he's left for his family. This is white people, right? Their beloved fiction. They're having fun stealing from dead people. So they're going to go and steal this guy's money. And Huckleberry Finn, he doesn't want to be with these white guys. He wants to get with Nigger Jim and get out of here. And he's trying to figure out a way to do that. And so this is him coming up with a way that he's going to get away from these guys and mess up their plans to steal this money. He's figuring it out. And this is going to be, just brace yourself. You're about to get 20 niggers dropped on you. But that's not really what I'm reading this for. Well, blamed if the king didn't bill the house and the niggers and all the property for auction straight off. Sale 2 days after the funeral. But anybody could buy private property beforehand if they wanted to. So the next day after the funeral, along about noontime, the girl's joy got the first jolt. A couple of nigger traders came along, and the king sold them niggers reasonable for 3-day drafts, as they called it, and away they went. The two sons up the river to Memphis, and their mother down the river to New Orleans. I thought them poor girls and them niggers would break their hearts for grief. They cried around each other and took on so it most made me down sick to see it. The girls said they hadn't ever dreamed of seeing the family separated or sold away from town. I can't ever get it out of my memory, the sight of them poor, miserable girls and niggers hanging around each other's necks and crying. And I reckon I couldn't have stood it all, but would have had to bust out and tell on our gang if I hadn't known the sale weren't no account and the niggers would be back home in a week or two. The thing made a big stir in the town, too, and a good many come out flat-footed and said it was scandalous to separate the mother and the children that way. It injured the fraud some, but the old fool, he bullied right along, spite of all the Duke could say or do, and I tell you, the other white man was powerful uneasy. Next day was the auction. About broad day in the morning, the king and the Duke come up in the garret and woke me up, and I see their look, that there was trouble. The king says, "Was you in my room night before last? "No, your majesty," which was the way I always called him when nobody but our gang weren't around. "Was you in there yesterday or last night?" "No, your majesty." "Honor bright, no lies." "Honor bright, your majesty, I'm telling you the truth. I ain't been near your room since Miss Mary Jane took you and the Duke and showed it to you," the Duke says. "Have you seen anybody else go in there?" "No, your grace, not as I remember, I believe." "Stop and think. I studied a while and see my chance. Then I says, well, I see the niggers go in there several times. Both of them give a little jump and look like they hadn't ever expected it. And then like they had." Then the Duke says, "What, all of them?" "No, leastways, not all at once. That is, I don't think I ever see all come out at once, but just one at a time." "Hello? When was that?" "It was the day we had the funeral, in the morning. It weren't early because I overslept. I was just starting down the ladder, and I see them." "Well, go on, go on. What did they do? How did they act?" "They didn't do nothing, and they didn't act anyway, much fur as I see. They tiptoed away, so I seen easy enough that they shoved in there to do up your majesty's room or something, supposing you was up and found you weren't up. And so they was hoping to slide out of the way of trouble without waking you up, if they hadn't already waked you up." "Great guns, this is a go," says the king, and both of them looked pretty sick and tolerable silly. They stood there a-thinking and scratching their heads a minute. And then the Duke, he bust into a kind of little raspy chuckle and says, "It does beat all. How neat the niggers played their hand. They let on to be sorry they was going out of this region, And I believe they was sorry. And so did you. And so did everybody. Don't ever tell me anymore that a nigger ain't got any histrionic talent. Why, the way they played that thing, it would fool anybody. In my opinion, there's fortune in them. I will stop right there. Just clarifying for folks who might have been confused. Huckleberry Finn, the white child, he's with these older white guys, Your Majesty, the Duke and the King. That's what he called. They're not dukes and kings. They're white people. They're just liars. They're lying racists, thieves. And so they're stealing this dead guy's money. Huckleberry Finn, he sneaks down. He steals the money from them and puts it someplace else. He hides it someplace else, and then he blames it on the niggers. And the white guy, of course, they believe this, and they're upset that the niggers have got away with their money, and then they're thinking that they, you know, could have invested in them and used them as actors in their play or something, as a scheme to get more money. I would use that quote to say, I don't think this is satire. I don't think it's funny. I think it's a lot of the same old, tired stereotypes of black people being presented as buffoons and the butt of white people's jokes. And just for the entertainment of racists. I don't see anything about this that would strike me as anti-racist. And even if it is an attempt to honestly capture the conduct and speech of racist man and racist woman circa 1885, I don't see any condemnation of this behavior at any point. All of the people who are practicing racism and mistreating black people, I don't see them being condemned at any point. I just see a lot of racist jokes. That's pretty much a lot of what this amounts to me, racist jokes. Pam, what do you think?
I agree with you. It's funny how it started out, you know, and I see this happen so much with white literature, white movies, white storytelling, is, you know, you started out almost being, you know, humanizing the slaves, you know, making you feel the anguish of them being separated. And then they just wipe that completely out, you know, and even if you know that these are the people who are stealing and lying, the important thing is that these slaves, these victims, have been, their plight has been ridiculed. And even if it's satire, it's still ridicule. You know, their suffering almost kind of takes a back seat to the tomfoolery that's going on. You know, so, you know, once again, you know, black suffering really has no importance. And I would really like to say that, try to compare this to the suffering of a different group. For example, Jews. Would it be called a satire if someone humorized the Holocaust? Would that be satire? Would that be acceptable? The only people whose suffering seems to be the subject of great ridicule and entertainment is the suffering of black people. You know, even Dave Chappelle one time, and I'm not blaming the victim, but even it reminds me of Dave Chappelle one time. Now, this might have been some what he was talking about when he said some of his when he turned down that $50 million Comedy Central deal, and he said that his comedy was making him feel irresponsible. And I wonder if he was talking about this particular skit he did. And this is when I stopped watching anything on the Dave Chappelle show. He did a skit about this, about something about dogs. I don't remember exactly, but he showed in the backdrop of his comedy skit a video of black civil rights marchers being bitten by dogs. And you probably all have that image in your mind of this. Bull Connor or whoever these white policemen were, and they were sicking the dogs on the black marchers, and the dogs had one young man by his front of his shirt, and the policeman was holding him, and he actually used that as the backdrop of a comedy routine. And I thought to myself, the only people that they would do that about are black people. So I don't see the satire in it. I suspect that Mark Twain, had he been trying to put racism and slavery on the carpet for criticism, he would not be considered the great American writer. So the fact that he is rewarded and uplifted and praised, kind of it's just a litmus test to me that he was promoting white supremacy. Yeah, this is my opinion.
Excuse me. I'm going to shoot a couple of these at you and see if, just see what you think. See what you, these are short, right to the point, and the language shouldn't be too much of a problem. So I'll shoot a couple of these just to get your quick thought. This is page 369. In the morning, we went out to the woodpile and chopped up the brass candlestick into handy sizes, and Tom put them and the pewter spoon in his pocket. Then he went to the nigger cabins, and while I got Nat's notice off, Tom shoved a piece of candlestick into the middle of a corn pone that was in Nigger Jim's pan, and we went along with Nat to see how it would work out. And it just worked out noble. When Nigger Jim bit into it, it most mashed out all his teeth, and there weren't ever anything could have worked better. Tom said so himself. Nigger Jim, he never let on, but what, it was only just a piece of rock or something like that that's always getting into bread, you know. But after that, he never bit into nothing, but what, he jabbed his fork into three or four places first. Now, what are your thoughts on that one?
Is that supposed to be funny? They mashed all his teeth out? And flip it. Had Nigger Jim, had he played that trick on Tom, would it still have had the same humorous effect? Would it have been funny in that book if he had mashed out all of Tom Sawyer's teeth? Oh, thank you, Jesus Christ. Woo!
Woo!
I mean, like, you know, I almost said a bad word. I had to hold it back. But if it's not funny when it happens to me, if it's not funny when it happens to you, it ain't funny when it happens to me. That's just my, you know, that's just the way it goes for me. And I can't imagine it being funny had it been flipped around. This isn't satire. This is just, you know, it's just plain old racism.
I got one more quick one, just see what you think. But the image I had in my mind was those pictures of black children with alligators chasing them. And I remembered when we had the co-curators from the Lest We Forget Black Holocaust Museum, and they talked about how those images, that is based on unfortunate history of racism, white supremacy, when racists, they would go and get small black children and use them as bait for alligators down in New Orleans, Louisiana area. They were on the program, and they talked about that extensively in April and June of 2010. But this is next quick hitter. This is on page 81. J. Justin and Gwen Ragsdale, their names, by the way, black male and female couple. They're married and co-curators of the Lest We Forget Black Holocaust Museum in Philadelphia. Page 81, this is just Nigger Jim and Huckleberry Finn together. After dinner Friday, we was laying around in the grass at the upper end of the ridge and got out of tobacco. I went to the cavern to get some and found a rattlesnake in there. I killed him and curled him up on the foot of Jim's blanket, ever so natural, thinking there'd be some fun when Jim found him there. Well, by night, I forgot all about the snake, and when Jim flung himself down on the blanket while I struck a light, the snake's mate was there and bit him. Nigger Jim jumped up yelling, and the first thing the light showed was the varmint curled up and ready for another spring. I laid him out in a second with a stick, and Nigger Jim grabbed Pap's whiskey jug and begun to pour it down. He was barefooted, and the snake bit him right on the heel. That all comes of my being such a fool as to not remember that whenever you leave a dead snake, its mate always comes there and curls around it. Nigger Jim told me to chop off the snake's head and throw it away, and then skin the body and roast a piece of it. I done it, and he eat it, and said it would help cure him. He made me take off the rattles and tie them around his wrist, too. He said that would help. Then I slid out quiet and threw the snakes clear away amongst the bushes. for I weren't going to let Jim find out it was all my fault, not if I could help it. I will stop right there. Jim was laid up as a result of this for 4 days and four nights. I'll stop right there. And oh, wait a minute, because it gives a little bit on the wounds, his victimization. Jim sucked and sucked at the jug, and now and then he got out of his head and pitched around and yelled. But every time he come to himself, he went to sucking at the jug again. His foot swelled up pretty big, and so did his leg. But by and by, the drunk begun to come, and so I judged he was all right. But I'd rather been bit with a snake than Pabst's whiskey. Jim was laid up for 4 days and four nights. Then the swelling was gone, and he was around good again. I made up my mind I wouldn't ever take a hold of a snake skin again with my hands, now that I see what had come of Nigger Jim. And there you go. Thoughts on that one?
Yeah, what a friend, what a pal. You know, the thing that crossed my mind when I was listening to it was, now this is taught in every school. I know they was required reading in my school, so you're thinking about millions and millions of school children, white, black, red, and brown, whatever, and they're reading this, and this is considered satire. This is considered all-American, good, clean fun. This is, you know, this is the all-American hero, Tom Sawyer, or Huckleberry Finn, or whatever. So what were they really teaching you? They're teaching you that to abuse black people, as long as you don't really mean any harm, is okay. Maybe that's why it's so hard for white people today to acknowledge the harm that they're doing. Maybe it's one of the reasons, part of the training, is that unless you got a dead black body, you really haven't done anything wrong. So maybe that's the whole foundation of the Tom Sawyer and the Huckleberry Finn, is to make black people, you know, victimizing black people seem like as normal as apple pie and mom, you know, mom and apple pie and all-American kind of thing to do. Because millions of kids have millions, hundreds of millions of kids over the last 100 years have read The Adventures of Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn. And there's got to be a lesson in there somewhere as far as how you should treat black people.
Wow. Wow. Context of white supremacy. Yeah, I totally agree. I look at this as a big nigger joke. White people love racist jokes. They love nigger jokes. That's why I said I want to incorporate that into the show, because you can unpack these jokes and learn a lot about how racist man and racist woman really think. And I mean, this is from a time period when white people were much more explicit about how they felt about black people, non-white people. So that's what I look at this as, just, you know, white people, you know, being honest and telling the truth, white people talking about other white people. I mean, it's great. I think you can really learn a lot about white people, and this will do a lot to shake up your white identification, I think. I guess it could, if you are confused, it could push you the other way. I'll make that. If you are informed about racism, white supremacy, I think reading this book will help dislodge some of your white identification, because it'll make you upset. Seeing all these niggers and all that, I think it will have a constructive impact. If you're confused, it might intensify your white identification, because this book does not make you feel good about black people. Did you want to add anything more?
Oh, I totally agree. I think the flip side of making you aware and become more conscious, the flip side is making you become more submerged in denial. Because I think a lot of black people really are overwhelmed from a very early age at how much negativity and ugliness is part of being black. So I think a lot of black people are running like, you know, like they're on fire to try to get away from anything that tags them as black. And I think stuff like this, if you could imagine a black child sitting in the classroom with a white teacher, maybe in a predominantly white classroom, and they're reading this, and they're reading this book, and they're surrounded by white people, what kind of psychological trick bag does that put a little child in, who more than likely is not going to be able to go to their parents and get any clarification? Because most of us don't tell our kids anything about racism. And I've actually had black people tell me, well, I don't want to teach them hate. But what about what you went through? Why don't you tell them what you went through? Well, they don't want to tell them that either. Well, why don't you at least, you know, they don't want to do that. So most of the black kids are out here. They're sitting in classrooms, a lot of times predominantly white classrooms, and they're being psychologically assaulted over and over again. So I agree. I think a lot of black people, it would drive them just the opposite direction that they should be going in. When they see the black people, the great black people, just a normal American pastime.
I totally agree. I totally agree. I think this book, I would say this book, and there are a lot of books like this. I think this is one, I think, Heart of Darkness, Joseph Conrad, that's another one. They have a lot of these sort of treasured, classic, racist books, Gone with the Wind, that they just revere, and they make movies out of them sometimes, and just, you know, love these white authors to death. And excuse me, I think it just is a part of the normalizing and worshiping of white supremacy. When Jacqueline Battalore, when she was on the program, she's a admitted white supremacist. She explained that that is a part of how white supremacy replicates itself. When you that's what a system is. I think some people use that term hegemony. That's what it means when you can create something that will be self-replicating. That is a part of how white supremacy replicates itself, as you figure out a way to transfer a way of thinking that you want to last. And this is how white people can transfer. This is what I'm saying. This is racist code that has not changed for 150 years. You want to do something illegal, you want to lie and trick someone, blame it on a black person. You see white people doing that today. Same logic. Yeah. Charles Stewart, Sharon Smith, the white woman during the 2008 presidential election. She wrote B on her face, said a black male assaulted her, and turned out to be not true. There was a woman in Pennsylvania. She said a black male stole her car with her daughter in it. She lied and went to Disney World. White people have been using
that. Was just 2010. That was just recently.
Same racist code, whether it's Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn saying we're just going to blame these niggers for stealing the money, or 2010. Black male through, what did he say? She said black, in, here in Washington State, white woman said a non-white female threw acid on me. Here you go, pretty girl.
Mm-hmm.
Same racist code.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least we know now where they got some of their training.
Exactly.
Huckleberry Finn.
Exactly, exactly. And that's the way I look at this. That's the exact way I look at this, and I think that's why, to me, that logic makes sense for why white people in 2011 are just now getting around to, oh, maybe we shouldn't have this book in schools calling black people niggers 213 times. Maybe that shouldn't be, and not even all of them. You don't even have white people in unison about that. You have white people who are angry. No, leave that in there. You can go online and you will see white people upset that they are taking nigger, even suggesting taking the word nigger out of this book. Highly offended. Yeah, I want to give you a little more of the flavor of the book and see if Pam will change her mind, perhaps. This is on page 350. This is 350. Let me see if I can. Oh, yeah. This is, white people easily can use words to control non-white people. This is, and these, I want you to keep in mind, these are white children. These are not adults. Tom and Huck are, you know, like 10, 11. These are young children. And they're with Nigger Jim, and there's another black character. I believe they reference him as Nigger something as well at some point. So this is a page or two, and you're also about to get dumped with about another 20 niggers. So brace yourself. Page 350. So drat him. We went along, but I didn't like it much. When we got in, we couldn't hardly see anything. It was so dark. But Jim was there, sure enough, and could see us. And he sings out, "Why, Huck, and good land, ain't that Mr. Tom?" Keep in mind, these are children he's talking to. "I just knowed how it would be. I just expected it. I didn't know nothing to do. And if I had, I couldn't have done it, because that nigger busted in and says, "Why the gracious sakes, do he know you gentlemen?" We could see pretty well now. Tom, he looked at the nigger, steady and kind of wondering, and says, "Pay attention, this is man. Does who know us?" "Why, this here nigger Jim." "I don't reckon he does. But what put that in your head? What put it there? Didn't he just this minute sing like he knowed you two?" Tom says, in a puzzled kind of way, "Well, that's mighty curious. Who sung out? When did he sing out? What did he sing out?" And turns to me perfectly calm and says, "Did you hear anybody sing out?" Of course, there weren't anything to be said but one thing. So I says, "Nope, I ain't heard nobody say nothing." Then he turns to Jim and looks him over like he never see him before and says, "Did you sing out?" "No, sir," says nigger Jim. "I ain't said nothing, sir." "Not a word?" "No, sir, I ain't said a word." "Did you ever see us before?" "No, sir. No, sir, not as I knows on." So Tom turns to the nigger, which was looking wild and distressed, and says kind of severe, "What do you reckon's the matter with you anyway? What made you think somebody sung out?" "Oh, it's the dad blamed witches, sir. And I wished I was dead. I do. They's always at it, sir. And they do most kill me. They scares me so. Please to don't tell nobody about it, sir, or my Silas, he'll scold me, because he say there ain't no witches. It's just wish to goodness he was here now. I just wish to goodness he was here now. Then what would he say? I just bet he couldn't find no way to get around it this time. But it's always just so. Peoples that sot stays sot. They won't look into nothing and find it for themselves. When you find it out and tell them about it, they don't believe you. Tom give him a dime and said we wouldn't tell nobody, and told him to buy some more thread to tie up his wool with, and then looks at nigger Jim and says, "I wonder if Uncle Silas is going to hang this nigger." This is the black person talking now. "I wonder if Uncle Silas is going to hang this nigger. If I was to catch a nigger that was ungrateful enough to run away, I wouldn't give him up. I'd hang him." That was a black person talking. And whilst the nigger stepped to the door to look at the dime and bite it to see if it was good, he whispers to nigger Jim and says, "Don't ever let on to know us. And if you hear any digging on in the nights, it's us. We're going to set you free." Nigger Jim only had time to grab us by the hand and squeeze it. Then the nigger came back, and we said we'd come again sometime if the nigger wanted us to, and he said he would. More particular if it was dark, because the witches went for him mostly in the dark, and it was good to have folks around then. End of the chapter. Just make sure folks weren't confused. Tom and Huck, the little white children. Jim, nigger Jim, he recognizes them instantly, but they're, like I said, they're doing their joke thing, so they don't want him to let on that he knows them. And so they immediately, you know, "What? Who said something? I didn't hear anybody say anything," to confuse the other black person and to make him think he's crazy and that witches are saying things and haunting him. So he gets all confused about it and what have you. And then he makes this other black person says that, you know, he would not hesitate to hang another runaway slave if he caught him. That's at the end of the chapter there. What did you think about that section, Pam?
Ooh. It makes me wonder, was Jim, you know, Jim was, it sounded like Jim was just playing the role. I mean, I don't want to get into trying to create Jim outside the character that Mark Twain created, because I guess it's Mark Twain's character. He knew what his character was thinking. But, you know, I suspect Jim if it had been a real story, it wasn't as clueless as they let on. But the black person, was the black person serious? Or were they also kind of, I got a little confused. Was the black person serious about when they said about hanging a runaway slave, or were they just playing along with the white people? I don't know.
It comes up later in the book. It was a portion I was going to share, but it comes up later when they do their whole plan to escape. Oh, my God. You talk about white identification. Yeah, I'll share it because it will answer your question about the seriousness. I think from the context that he was serious, because it pops up later that other black people were upset about him doing this because they could potentially get in trouble with white people as a result of his conduct. So I think he was serious when he made those comments, or at least in the context of this story. I think just based on what Twain wrote, I think he was serious. I don't think he was saying that as a joke, but it is a satire. So, you know, but so they say, the chunk that's later, this is after Tom and Huck, they have done their whole escape thing with Nigger Jim. And in the process, I read the part where Tom gets shot, and Nigger Jim, you know, stands by his side to make sure that he's safe and sound and nothing happens to him. Then it comes the doctor. They go get a white doctor who comes to take care of Tom. And so, I'll just read you this section. This is Vintage. This is near the end, so this is kind of tying everything together with regards to what happened in the book. This is on page 420. And so Nigger Jim has just come back, and so the white people, they're upset because they think this is a runaway slave, so they're upset at Nigger Jim. Plus, they think something has happened to Tom. So Nigger Jim is coming back with Tom, and they just, you know, realize that Tom is still alive. And then they can divert their full attention to Nigger Jim, who they are upset with and ready to hang. So on 420, this is a white woman commenting, "He's alive, Tom. He's alive, thank God. And that's enough." And she snatched a kiss and flew for the house to get the bed ready, and scattering orders left and right at the niggers and everybody else as fast as her tongue could go, every jump of the way. I followed the men to see what was going to do with Jim, and the old doctor and Uncle Silas followed after Tom into the house. The men was very huffy, and some of them wanted to hang Jim, for example, to all other niggers around there, so they wouldn't be trying to run away like Jim done and making such a raft of trouble and keeping a whole family scared most to death for days and nights. But the others said, "Don't do it. It wouldn't answer at all. He ain't our nigger, and his owner would turn up and make us pay for him." So that cooled them down a little, because the people that's always the most anxious for to hang a nigger that ain't done just right is always the very ones that ain't the most anxious to pay for him when they've got their satisfaction out of him. They cussed Jim considerable and give him a cuff or two side the head once in a while, but Jim never said nothing, and he never let on to know me, and they took him to the same cabin and put his own clothes on him and changed him again and not to no bed leg this time, but to a big staple drove into the bottom log, and chained his hands too and both legs, and said he weren't to have nothing but bread and water to eat after this till his owner come, or he was sold at auction, because he didn't come in certain length of time, and filled up our hole and said a couple of
Is racism hurting you? On issues of race, are you unable to speak, think, and act with clarity and confidence? Are you tired of laughing when nothing is funny, smiling when you are not happy, agreeing when you really disagree? CounterRacism.com, you can learn specific strategies and techniques to counter the behaviors of the people who practice racism in all areas of activity. Using words correctly, following counter-racist logic, even counter-racist science projects designed to reveal what racism is, how it works, and how to counter it. The open source code writing format allows you to pick and choose from a variety of counter-racist suggestions so you can produce the code that works for you. Stop by CounterRacism.com today and help replace racism with justice.
That's Counter-Racism.com.
White people are the problem, man. I got disconnected. That's what happened. Actually lost my whole internet connection briefly, but think that's been restored. I will try to pick back up. Did you all hear the portion where he was explaining when people get excited about lynching, hanging a nigger? Did you all hear that part, or did you miss that?
I caught the part where I think he was just said that they're real quick to hang them or something to the effect, but not real quick to want to pay for them.
Yeah, okay, beautiful, beautiful.
Wow.
Okay, so it goes on. That's why I said I learned so much reading this. I read this book in 48 hours, 430 pages. I learned a ton, and I think, like I said, if you are a, particularly if you are a non-white student, black student, and this book is in your class, you can have a field day. And that's two other main points I want to get, but I'll finish this section. He says, so the white people, they get Nigger Jim back. They cursed, they cussed Nigger Jim considerable and give him a cuff or two side the head and once in a while. But Jim never said nothing, and he never let on to know me. And they took him to the same cabin and put his own clothes on him and chained him again. And not to no bed leg this time, but to a big staple drove into the bottom log and chained his hands too and both legs and said he weren't to have nothing but bread and water to eat after this till his owner come or he was sold at auction because he didn't come in a certain length of time and filled up our hole and said a couple of farmers with guns must stand watch around about the cabin every night and a bulldog tied to the door in the daytime. And about this time, they was through with the job and was tapering off with a kind of general goodbye cussing. And the old doctor comes and takes a look and says, white identification, listen closely, don't be rougher on him than you're obliged to be, because he ain't a bad nigger. When I got out to where I found the boy, I see I couldn't cut the bullet out without some help, and he weren't in no condition for me to leave to go and get help. And he got a little worse and a little worse, and after a long time he went out of his head and wouldn't let me come anigh him any more and said if I chalked his wrath, he'd kill me. And no end of wild foolishness like that. And I see I couldn't do anything at all with him. So I says I got to have help somehow. And the minute I says it, out crawls this nigger from somewhere, and he says he'll help. And he done it, too, and done it very well. Of course, I judged he must be a runaway nigger. And there I was, and there I had to stick, right straight along the rest of the day and all night. It was a fix, I tell you. I had a couple of patients with the chills, and of course I'd have liked to run up to town to see him, but I doesn't, because the nigger might get away, and then I'd be to blame. And yet never a skiff come close enough for me to hail. So there I had to stick, plumb till daylight this morning, and I never see a nigger that was better, nuss, or faithfuller, and yet he was risking his freedom to do it, and was all tired too. and I see plain enough he'd been worked main hard lately. I like the nigger for that. I tell you, gentlemen, a nigger like that is worth $1,000, and kind treatment, too. I had everything I needed, and the boy was doing as well there as he would have done at home. Better, maybe, because it was so quiet. But there I was, with both of my hands, and there I had to stick, till about dawn this morning. And then some men in a skiff come by, and as good luck would have it, the nigger was sitting by with the pallet, with his head propped on his knees, sound asleep. So I motioned them in quiet, and they slipped up on him and grabbed him and tied him before he knowed what he was about. And we never had no trouble. And the boy being in kind of a flighty sleep too, we muffled the oars and hitched the raft and towed her over very nice and quiet. And the nigger never made the least row or said a word from the start. He ain't no bad nigger, gentlemen. That's what I think about him. Somebody says, "Well, it sounds very good, doctor, I'm obliged to say." Then the others softened up a little too, and I was mighty thankful to that old doctor for doing Jim that good turn. And I was glad it was according to my judgment of him, too, because I thought he had a good heart in him and was a good man the first time I see him. Then they all agreed that Jim had acted very well and was deserving to have some notice took of it and reward. So every one of them promised right out and hearty that they wouldn't cuss him no more. And I will stop right there. Does that do anything to redeem the work of Mr. Twain?
Oh, it confirms white supremacy all day long. It is that last thing that you read confirms this white supremacy. I wanted to know if Nigger Jim won an Academy Award for the Green Mile.
Let's see. Did Michael Duncan Clark, did he get Academy? I don't know. I don't believe he did. No, he did not. I don't even think he got a nomination. I'll double check to see.
That was kind of like a Nigger Jim performance, you know. And, you know, I mean, look at the message inherent in that is, he's a good nigga who got the approval, not the respect, but the approval of all those white people by taking care of that. Wasn't he basically getting approval because he had taken care of Tom, even though he put his own self at risk and didn't complain or anything when they captured him and just went along and didn't say a word about his mistreatment? He was a good nigga because he didn't protest his mistreatment, didn't try to get away, you know, and turned out he was a good nigga after all. Isn't that the lesson? That if you don't fight your oppression, you know, that you might get the white approval?
Michael Clark Duncan, he did get nominated for an Academy Award for supporting role. In Green Mile, he did get nominated. He didn't win, but he did get nominated, and the film got 4 Academy Award nominations total. I don't think they won any. But I could see that sliding in the name calling too. calling him Nigger Jim.
Okay.
But, you know, point made.
Well, you know, I'm not calling him Nigger Jim. I'm just saying that was a Nigger Jim moment.
I agree.
You know? Mm-hmm. You know, sacrifice yourself, even though you're being mistreated and what's happening to you is unjust and they know it's unjust, you're going to get some kind of recognition or, you know, some kind of approval for sacrificing yourself for your victimizers, for your oppressors. Yeah. That seems to be the general message that black people get. They want to be really good black people.
Whole lot of that in here. I wanted to, I said, I hope people are thinking, you know, what does this term mean? I hope people are thinking about that, hearing it, you know, this term so many times, nigger so many times. And, you know, what would you replace it with? This is a one sentence because the white person who wrote this book and removed the word nigger, it's in here 213 times. it was reported that the word that they used in its place was slave. And I just want to read this sentence. And I'll ask you, Pam, do you think that's an accurate replacement? Well, I ask about this sentence first, and then I'll follow asking about the replacement. But just with this sentence, the sentence is, yes, you did. Bought six chaws. Excuse me, I'm reading two sentences. Yes, you did. You bought six chaws. You borrowed store tobacco and paid back niggerhead. I'll read that sentence one more time. You borrowed store tobacco and paid back niggerhead. Okay. What would your view on that sentence be? Because they're not, it seems they're not talking about black people, but you do have the word nigger.
Is the niggerhead something that's worthless?
It seems to be an inferior type of tobacco.
It's not really funny. It's just that it reminds me of some other terms I heard where, you know, I can't even think of them, but there was a whole list of how nigger was used to describe something worthless and inferior. Wish I could think of those, where I saw that. But I just assume it meant you giving me something worthless. Jesus. Oh, man.
Would it be, could you replace nigger with slave in that sentence, and would it still be accurate? Would it still convey what the sentence was originally attempting to carry, the message the original sentence was attempting to convey?
No way. I mean, how could you say slave head? What does that mean? You know, so I don't think you can replace it unless you're trying to diffuse, unless you're refining your code.
Yeah, there's several of these. I mean, it's in there 213 times. You're going to have quite a few of these, in my opinion, where you're not going to be able to just, you know, bump that out and make it slave, in my opinion. But, I could be wrong. And it's supposed to be satire. So, you know, maybe this is much ado about nothing. The two other passages that I thought were great, these really stood out to me. And before I even hit those, I want to also point out, they have all this about removal of the word nigger. Engine is in this book a lot as well, and I haven't heard anyone say that they're removing engine. I could have done an engine count because that got pretty high as well. The word fair is also in this book a lot as well, and I could have done a count on that, but I thought those were also significant, just white supremacy in general. Non-white, non-black people get theirs too, but not as much as niggers, 213 times. But there are two passages that stick out. There are others, but there are two passages that really stick out to me that illustrate what it means to be a white person and the fact that even children understand what it means to be white. And I see this illustrated all the time, but I mean, it was quite profound that now I know I can quote Mark Twain. When I say that all white people are racist, even children, I'm going to start pointing to Mark Twain and his depiction of white children, because this book shows that white children are very informed about racism, white supremacy, and their role in it. I want to read these two quick, and I think I'll rest my reading, I think, for the day after I share these two. This is on page 133. It's a little bit earlier in the book. Anybody out there, if you happen to be flipping along The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. So on page 133, at this point in the book, this is much earlier in the story, and at this point, it's just Jim, Nigger Jim, and Huckleberry Finn, and they're together, they're going down the river on their raft and everything, and Huckleberry Finn knows that at this point, he thinks Jim is a runaway slave, like legit. He believes that, you know, Jim has run away. He doesn't want to be sold down south. He's trying to run away. And it doesn't sink in. Like, he has a moment where he reveals that he's not really consciously thinking, oh, dang, I'm helping a nigger get free. I'm not supposed to be doing this. And he has this incredible conversation where he's kind of thinking through this. And I want to share this and get your thoughts, Pam, because this happens a couple times in the book where it's like a white person is breaking from the racist code, and this gets discussed overtly in the book. Jim said it made him, Jim said it made him all over trembly and feverish to be so close to freedom. Well, I can tell you, it made me all over trembly and feverish too to hear him, because I begun to get it through my head that he was almost free. And who was to blame for it? Why, me. I couldn't get that out of my conscience. No how nor no way. It got to troubling me so I couldn't rest. I couldn't stay still in one place. I hadn't ever come home to me before what this thing was I was doing. But now it did, and it stayed with me and scorched me more and more. I tried to make out to myself what I weren't to blame, because I didn't run Jim off from his rightful owner, but it weren't no use. Conscience up and says every time, but you knowed he was running for his freedom, and you could have paddled ashore and told somebody. That was so. I couldn't get around that. No way. That was where it pinched. Conscience says to me, what had poor Miss Watson done to you that you could see her nigger off right under your eyes and never say one single word? What did that poor old woman do to you that you could treat her so mean? Why, she tried to learn you your book. She tried to learn you your manners. She tried to be good to you every way she knowed. That's what she done. I got to feeling so mean and so miserable, I most wished I was dead. I fidgeted up and down the raft, abusing myself to myself, and Jim was fidgeting up and down past me. We neither of us could keep still. Every time he danced around and says, there's Cairo, it went through me like a shot. And I thought if it was Cairo, I reckoned I would die of miserableness. Jim talked out loud all the time while I was talking to myself. He was saying how the first thing he would do when he got to a free state, he would go to saving up money and never spend a single cent. And when he got enough, he would buy his wife, which was owned on a farm close to where Miss Watson lived. And they would both work to buy the two children, and if their master wouldn't sell them, they'd get an abolitionist to go and steal them. It most froze me to hear such talk. He wouldn't ever dare to talk such talk in his life before. Just see what a difference it made in him the minute he judged he was about free. It was according to the old saying, give a nigger an inch and he'll take an L. Thinks I, this is what comes of my not thinking. Here was this nigger, which I had as good as helped to run away, coming right out flat-footed and saying he would steal the children, children that belonged to a man I didn't even know, a man that hadn't ever done me no harm. I was sorry to hear Jim say that. It was such a lowering of him. My conscience got to stirring me up hotter than ever, until at last I says to it, let up on me. It ain't too late. I'll paddle ashore at first light and tell. I felt easy and happy and light as a feather right off. All my troubles were gone. I went to looking out sharp for light and sort of singing to myself. By and by one showed. Jim sings out, we safe, Huck, we safe. Jump up and crack your heels. That's the good old Cairo at last. I just knows it. I says, I'll take the canoe and see, nigger Jim. It might be, you know. He jumped and got the canoe ready and put his old coat in the bottom for me to set on, and give me the paddle, and as I shoved off, nigger Jim says, pretty soon I'll be a-shouting for joy, and I'll say it's all on accounts of Huck. I's a free man, and I couldn't ever been free if it hadn't been for Huck. Huck done it. Jim won't ever forget you. Huck, you's the best friend Jim's ever had, and you's the only friend old Jim's got now. I was paddling off, all in a sweat, to tell on him. Man, and it is so racist that it is like you got this black man, and you will have white people who will say, see, even you laugh, Gus, it is funny. He's working against racism. He's pointing out the incorrectness of this all. whatever. Yeah. As I continued, I was paddling off all in a sweat to tell on him. But when he says this, it seemed to kind of take the tuck all out of me. I went along slow then, and I weren't right down certain whether I was glad I started or whether I weren't. When I was 50 yards out, Nigger Jim says, "There you goes, the old true Huck, the only white gentleman that ever kept his promise to old Jim." Well, I just felt sick. But I says, "I got to do it. I can't get out of it." Right then, along comes a skiff with two men in it with guns, and they stopped, and I stopped. One of them says, "What's that yonder, a piece of raft?" I says, "Do you belong on it?" "Yes, sir." "Any men on it?" "Only one, sir." "Well, there's five niggers run off tonight up yonder above the head of the bend. Is your man white or black?" I didn't answer up front. I didn't answer up prompt. I tried to, but the words wouldn't come. I tried for a second or two to brace up and out with it, but I weren't man enough. Hadn't the spunk of a rabbit. I see I was weakening, so I just give up trying and up and says, "He's white. I reckon we'll go and see for ourselves." "I wish you would," I says, "because it's Paps, and that's there, and maybe you can help me tow the raft ashore where the light is. He's sick, and so is Ma'am and Mary Ann." He goes on. I'm going to fast forward a little bit because he makes up this long lie about who's up front. Like I said, they lie, steal, and practice racism this whole book. That's all this is about, lying, stealing, practicing racism. So he makes up this long lie about who's up front. He doesn't tell on the non-white person, Nigger Jim, and he gets they give him some money. And Nigger Jim hears all this, and so I'm fast-forwarding, blah, 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 all this happens. And they make sure to tell him to look out for runaway niggers so that, you know, he's on his job. So they leave, and he's going back to see Nigger Jim now. So the guys go off, and I got aboard the raft, feeling bad and low because I knowed very well I had done wrong. And I see it weren't no use for me to try to learn to do right. A body that don't get started right when he's little ain't got no show. When the pinch comes, there ain't nothing to back him up and keep him to his work, and so he gets beat. Then I thought a minute and says to myself, "Hold on, suppose you'd a done right and give Jim up. Would you felt better than what you do now?" "No," says I, "I'd feel bad. I'd feel just the same way I do now." "Well then," says I, "what's the use you learning to do right when it's troublesome to do right and ain't no trouble to do wrong, and the wages is just the same?" I was struck. I couldn't answer that, so I reckoned I wouldn't bother no more about it. But after this, always do whichever come handiest at the time. I went into the wigwam. Jim weren't there. I looked all around. He weren't anywhere. I says, "Jim, here I is, Huck. Is they out of sight?" "Don't talk loud." He was in the river under the stern oar with just his nose out. I told him they was out of sight, so he came aboard. He says, "I was listening to all the talk, and I slips in the river, and when I was going to shove for show if they come aboard, then I was going to swim to the raft again when they was gone. But lawsy, how you did fool him, Huck. That was the smartest dodge, I tell you, child. I expect it saved old Jim. Old Jim ain't going to forget you that, honey." Then we talked about the money. It was a pretty good raise, $20 apiece. Jim said we could take a deck passage on a steamboat, and the money would last us as far as we wanted to go in the free states. He said 20 miles more weren't far to the raft, but he wished we was already there. And it goes on to something else. I'll stop there, but I thought that was a really interesting chunk. Thoughts on that passage and his decision to not rat on Nigger Jim at that point?
So friends like that, you don't need enemies. Oh my goodness. At least now we know why Mark Twain is called the, what is this line? It says, "The greatest American humorist of his age." At least now we know why.
Does that support the line that this is a work against racism, the fact that the character has some guilt about turning Jim, Nigger Jim, in, and he doesn't do it? Does that redeem the book in any way?
I'm sure it was intended to redeem him, but it doesn't redeem him in my eyes. You know, I mean, it seems like that happens all the time. You know, in the midst of the great practice of racism and practicing white supremacy, here comes a moment of redemption, you know, as though that wipes out everything else. You know, so I don't buy it. I don't see it. I see it maybe as an attempt, and certainly there are people who probably see it that way, you know, but, nah. I mean, I'm sure Hitler had his moments of redemption, too, and everybody else. You know, John Wayne Gacy had his moments of redemption when he put on that clown uniform, but that doesn't mean he wasn't a child killer. So a moment of redemption versus a lifetime of practicing white supremacy, yeah. It's not impressive. But like I say, at least we know now why Mark Twain is so highly revered.
Context of white supremacy. This struggle, it goes on for the duration of the book. Huck, he's struggling with what to do about Jim and feeling conflicted because he's not doing the right thing as a white person, even though he's a child. He knows he's not doing the right thing as a white person. He goes on. This is 314. He says, once I said to myself, it would be 1,000 times better for Jim to be a slave at home where his family was as long as he'd got to be a slave. And so I'd better write a letter to Tom Sawyer and tell him to tell Miss Watson where I was. Miss Watson is the white woman, the racist who, quote unquote, owns Nigger Jim. But I soon give up that notion for two things. She'd be mad and disgusted at his rascality and ungratefulness for leaving her. And so she'd sell him straight down the river again. And if she didn't, everybody naturally despises an ungrateful nigger. And they'd make Nigger Jim feel it all the time. And so he'd feel ornery and disgraced. And then think of me. It would get all around that Huck Finn helped a nigger to get his freedom. And if I was ever to see anybody from that town again, I'd be ready to get down and lick his boots for shame. That's just the way a person does a low-down thing, and then he don't want to take no consequence of it. Thinks as long as he can hide it, it ain't no disgrace. That was my fix exactly. The more I studied about this, the more my conscience went to grinding me, and the more wicked and low-down and ornery I got to feeling. And at last, when it hit me all of a sudden that there was the plain hand of Providence slapping me in the face and letting me know my wickedness was being watched all the time from up there in heaven, whilst I was stealing a poor old woman's nigger that hadn't ever done me no harm and now was showing me there's one that's always on the lookout and ain't a-going to allow no such miserable doings to go only just so far and no further. I most dropped in my tracks. I was so scared. Well, I tried the best I could to kind of soften it up somehow for myself by saying I was brung up wicked and was so I weren't so much to blame. But the something inside of me kept saying there was the Sunday school. You could have gone to it, and if you'd a done it, they'd a learnt you. There, that people that acts as I'd been acting about the nigger goes to everlasting fire. It made me shiver. And I about made up my mind to pray and see if I couldn't try to quit being the kind of boy I was and be better. I kneeled down, but the words wouldn't come. Why wouldn't they? It weren't no use to try and hide it from him, nor from me, neither. I knowed very well why they wouldn't come. It was because my heart weren't right. It was because I weren't square. It was because I was playing double. I was letting on to give up sin, but away inside of me, I was holding on to the biggest one of all. I was trying to make my mouth say I would do all the right thing and the clean thing and go and write to that nigger's owner and tell where he was. But deep down in me, I knowed it was a lie and he knowed it. And you can't pray a lie. I found that out. So I was full of trouble, full as I could be, and didn't know what to do. At last, I had an idea. And I says, I'll go and write the letter and then see if I can pray. Why, it was astonishing the way I felt as light as a feather, right straight off, and my troubles all gone. So I got a piece of paper and a pencil, all glad and excited, and sat down and wrote, Miss Watson, your runaway nigger Jim is down here 2 miles below Pikesville, and Mr. Phelps has got him, and he will give him up for the reward if you send. Huck Finn. I felt good and all washed clean of sin for the first time I had ever felt so in my life, and I knowed I could pray now, but I didn't do it straight off, but laid the paper down and sat there thinking, how good it was all this happened so, and how near I come to being lost and going to hell, and went on thinking and got to thinking over our trip down the river, and I see nigger Jim before me, all the time in the day and in nighttime, sometimes moonlight, sometimes storms, and we are floating along, talking and singing and laughing, but somehow I couldn't seem to strike no places to harden me against him, but only the other kind. I'd see him standing my watch on top of his, instead of calling me, so I could go on sleeping, and I see how glad he was when I come back out of the fog, and when I come to him again in the swamp, up there where the feud was and such like times, and would always call me honey, and pet me, and do everything he could think of for me, and how good he always was. And at last I struck the time I saved him by telling the men we had smallpox aboard, and he was so grateful and said I was the best friend old Jim ever had in the world, and the only one he's got now. And then I happened to look around and see the paper. It was a close pace. I took it up and held it in my hand. I was trembling because I got to decide forever betwixt two things, and I knowed it. I studied a minute, sort of holding my breath, and then says to myself, all right, then I'll go to hell, and tore it up. It was awful thoughts and awful words, but they were said, and I let them say stay said, and never thought no more about reforming. I shoved the whole thing out of my head and said I would take up wickedness again, which was in my line, being brung up to it, and the other weren't. And for a starter, I would go to work and steal nigger Jim out of slavery again. And if I could think up anything worse, I would do that too, because as long as I was in and in for good, I might as well go the whole hog. And I'll stop right there. That passage, it did, in my opinion, very powerful equating failure to practice white supremacy with the worst of the worst sins. It's almost, you know, making racism, white supremacy ordained by God. You are committing some sort of blasphemy if you don't practice racism. What were your thoughts on this paragraph, or I guess a couple pages?
I got the same impression. It was like a battle between good and right, you know, righteous good and evil. It's like a white morality lesson, you know. Like, you know, so all that torment over not practicing white supremacy. So I would think that for a young person reading that book, that would imprint on their brain that, you know, you, it's not about right or wrong. It's about doing what is good for the good of white people. So that's the real morality that's practiced in this country and much of the world, in my opinion. Is it's, you know, right and wrong is out the window, because if you're talking about morality on the basis of what's right and wrong, you'd have to stop practicing white supremacy. And since we don't see any signs of that, they got a whole different moral code. And I believe that young white people, young children, white children learn that code at a very, very early age. You know, I think perhaps the feeling of discomfort is even perhaps in the DNA. I don't know. But they did a study not too long ago, and you know, this is white people doing the study, and they found that it appeared that babies, infants, were discriminating based on race. Babies. So, I don't know. You know, I have my own opinion about how far and deep it goes, but it certainly sounds like the dilemma is not right or wrong, about what's right or what's wrong. It's about what's right for white people. That seems to be the religion.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. I think I know Yellow Manny, he said that for many white people, practicing racism, white supremacy, for them, their enjoyment as a white person is like 9.5, and they don't get the full 10 just because some of them, they know it's kind of messed up the way that they treat non-white people, and so they have some guilt about that, like, oh, man, look at all this that we've done to non-white people. But I think they will do things like this, have these little books and exercises and things so they can do some hand wringing, because you don't want to think of yourself as being a racist. I think that's a part of the deception. You don't want to think of yourself as being a bad person. And I think, yeah, white people do a lot of that hand wringing and, oh, and I don't know, and, you know, it's so tough, and I've got all these decisions, but they know they're going to continue to practice racism. Even if I have some guilt about it, even if I feel a little bad about it, even if I look out my window from time to time and I see black people being mistreated and killed by the cops and Nigger Jim off in chains, I feel a little bad about that. But, you know, I'm white and, you know, this is the business we have chosen. I think Dr. Akintunde, he said white people struggling with it. Their struggles have not in any way impeded their ability to practice racism. So whatever they're struggling with, it's not that deep. I wanted to get one more quick quote in, and then I was going to check the phone lines because a lot of people did call. If you are interested in calling in to share your views, and I'm very curious to hear folks' feedback. The number is 347-215-6071. The live feed is going to end in about 2 minutes, so you should probably call right now if you have questions or comments. And I guess, you know, this is probably great respect for you, because I don't know if a lot of folks would have tuned in to hear Gus by himself read Huckleberry Finn and Mark Twain, but a lot of people apparently did tune in, and, you know, hope they got something constructive. this quote that I wanted to share, because like I said, I see so many aspects of racist code that are familiar and consistent. This is a quick, like, three sentences. This is on 121. This is Huck is asking Nigger Jim a question. They're talking about French. Nigger Jim does not understand French. And Huck is questioning about that. He says, suppose a man was to come to you and say, parlez-vous français? What would you think? And Nigger Jim responds, he said, I wouldn't think nothing. I'd take and bust him over the head. That is, if he weren't white. I wouldn't allow no nigger to call me that. That's on page 121, and I just thought that was interesting. Do you want to get in anything before I get ready to check the phone line?
I'm sorry.
I said, did you want to get in any comments about that particular sentence or anything else before I hit the phone line?
Yeah, I did. I think I don't know how people feel about the word nigger. But my take on this whole thing of trying to clean up the book and all that has nothing to do with not practicing racism or white supremacy. It has everything to do with hiding nigger in the closet from black people so that black people don't catch on to what it really means. And if I could just really briefly read Neely Fuller's definition of nigger, or should I say nigger according to Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., a nigger is a non-white person who is subject to white supremacy. That's the truth. So people have asked me, do I fit that description? I say yes, but now everything in the code book is supposed to be of constructive value. Otherwise, it's not supposed to be in there. So a person may ask, how is that constructive for a white person to call you a nigger and you admit that you are one? You give the definition. Now, what you have done when you say the definition of me being a nigger is that I am subject to white supremacy. Now what you are doing is indicting the white people who are white supremacists. You have taken the word and made it an indictment, not of yourself, but just of a description of yourself because of what is being done to you. And then I elaborate on the word nigger by taking it further so people get a dimension of the implication for the word. I call it when a black person is taken under white supremacy and taken through the process of niggerization. So I believe that the attempt to remove nigger is more or less of not revealing what white people have been for a very long time. It has nothing to do with being sensitive to black people's feelings. It has nothing to do with not practicing white supremacy. And, in fact, there is no guilt. I mean, you mentioned guilt. I believe there's a modicum of guilt, but the guilt is mostly of being exposed, not of doing the wrong thing. So that kind of guilt is not really shame-based. It's more embarrassment. So I would caution us not to fall for the hype that white people are struggling or that they're feeling guilty. You know, I think what it is not wanting to be exposed for doing what historically they have always done. And so I'll end there.
Well said. TrojanHorse1.com, TrojanHorse1.com. I'm going to check some of the folks on the phone line. And I guess keep in mind my earlier comment about, because you talked about the definition of the word nigger, and I think that's very important if white people are talking about removing this word. Opportunity to really put counter-racism skills to the test in why are we removing this word? What problem is being caused by this word? What problem are we looking to solve by removing this term? What word are we going to replace it with? What does the term mean? Let's be clear about that, you know, what this term means. Like, really a brilliant opportunity for counter-racists to shine, particularly if you're in the classroom, just asking questions. I will hit the phone lines. The person that called in, Brandy M. Baker. Brandy M. Baker, did you have a question?
Can I be heard? Hello, can I be heard?
Yes.
Oh, greetings.
Oh, you're breaking up a little bit.
Oh, can I be heard better? Can I be heard?
I can.
A little
I
better
hear
now,
you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No. Well, I'm enjoying the show, and I'll just listen now because my line is breaking up.
Oh, no worries. Thank you.
I'm calling you from an island.
Oh, okay. I got you. I'm not sure what is causing the disruption in the line or what have you, but yeah, I could hear you briefly for some moments kind of clearly, and then it would break up a little bit. But yeah, if you have a question or whatever, yeah, I'll check your line again as we roll. The person who called in 2736, did you have a question? 2736?
No questions right now. I guess I'll say my piece if we had commentary afterwards.
Okay. Person who called in from a block number, did you have a question, comment?
Greetings, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Greetings, Gus. Pam, nice to hear you on the radio again.
Thank you.
I didn't get to hear the last comment. It seems that your line was, when you were speaking before Gus went to open lines, It was a blank space, and then you came in with the tail end. So I don't know if you remember what you were speaking of, if you can go back and repeat those, because it was completely muted out.
Okay. I believe what I was saying was, did you hear the Neil E. Fuller definition for nigger?
No, if that was in in the last commentary, no, because all we got was about the last two sentences.
Okay. All right. You know what I can do, if you think it's useful, Gus, I can repeat what Neil E. Fuller said about nigger.
Oh, you can't. I was just going to let her know the everyone else heard what you said, Pam. The only folks who missed out were the callers that I was placing online, and that was because I spoke with them privately, and when I did that, they were not able to hear the show. So those are the only people who missed out. But, yeah, feel free to repeat it so everybody will be up to speed.
Okay, I'll do it really quickly. The reason that, you know, the whole thing about the nigger this and nigger that is, and my belief is the reason that they want to take it out of the books is not out of sensitivity to black people. It's not out of being politically correct. It's out of refining their code and hiding their history. So I believe that's the real reason that they want to take nigger out, because if black people started to understand the word and not let the word embarrass them or shame. We shouldn't be ashamed. We didn't create niggas, and we didn't create the word nigger. So why are we uncomfortable with it? Why are we ashamed of it? Because we've allowed ourselves to be identified by a made-up word and a made-up identity that really reflects more on the maker-up of the word, the creator of the word, than the person that it's being used against. But this is what Neely Fuller said about the word nigger. A nigger is a non-white person who is subject to white supremacy. That's the truth. So people have asked me, do I fit that description? I say yes. But now everything in the code book is supposed to be of constructive value. Otherwise, it's not supposed to be in there. So a person may ask, how is that constructive for a white person to call you a nigger and you admit that you are one? You give the definition. Now, what you have done when you say the definition of me being a nigger is that I am subject to white supremacy. Now, what you are doing is indicting the white people who are white supremacists. You have taken the word and made it an indictment, not of yourself, but just a description of yourself because of what is being done to you. And then I elaborate on the word nigger by taking it further so people get a dimension of the implications for the word. I call it when a black person is taken under white supremacy and taken through the process of niggerization. So that was my only point, was black people are the ones made to feel uncomfortable. White people should be feeling uncomfortable. We should be blaming white people for the word. They created the word, and they created the condition that created niggers all over the planet. So when they move, when they take a big move like they are in Texas, you know, trying to revise all the school books, and Texas is really the bellwether for every school book that's going to be printed in the United States. So they've already started revising the history of America. And when they start to do that and take words out, what they're doing is they're protecting themselves. And that's pretty much was my point.
I quite agree with you, because I felt the same way about what you were stating. I never had to read that book in for any kind of school project, but I read it for Tom Sawyer as well as Huck Finn. I read that just for enjoyment, so to speak. But it never really sunk into me until, because I never went back and read it again. It's been over 20 years or more since the last time I looked at that book. But since all those passages that Gus and yourself went over tonight, I'm going to go back and do another reread, and I might be able to pick up some more refinement in there. But I do remember the Indian word and the nigger word was in there, but I did not count them as many times as Gus said, 213 times. So that is indeed an indictment towards white supremacy and this Mark Twain that they like to make such a big fuss over, as he being such the greatest satirist that the U.S. has ever produced.
Right, right. They're trying to clean up their history because I believe as the progression of white supremacy meets its greatest challenge, and that's coming up in the future, they need to clear the slate and confuse their victims by pretending that they don't have their history that they have. And Mark Twain's books are right there in front of you, you know, to show you what was going on. I mean, it's actually historically correct, separating families, they really weren't families, but separating black people who were related by blood. And the anguish, because I read slave journals for the second book that we're doing. We put a lot of stuff in there right from the mouths of slaves, literally. And when you read their interpretation of their history and the pain and anguish they went through, it is heartbreaking. So actually that passage about the family crying and this and that, that's pretty accurate. So I think they just want to whitewash their history, and in particular whitewash the use of that word and show you that they used the word first. Maybe that's what it's all about. You know, maybe taking it out, they don't want to show how much they used it.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. Pam and I were speaking before the program, and matter of fact, it would be better if you could share that, because I was, you could set it up because you can share what you were saying about Chris Rock and how this related to the program we did on President Obama, and then I can share my one cent.
I hope it'd be tipsy. I would, you know, the whole thing is if you look at Dr. Laura's rant. What did she say? She said that, even matter of fact, I got it here. Dr. Laura's rant, when she used the word nigger, 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 you know, she says, I don't get it. If anybody without enough melanin says it's a horrible thing, and Gus played that in the introductory audio clip, when black people say it, it's affectionate, it's very confusing, you know, and on, black people are responsible. Black people are responsible for the word nigger. because black people are using it. So now it's kind of a thing of, once again, playing the blame game. And I think that there's very little guilt. There's more or less a justification. I think white reaction to whatever guilt they feel is generally blaming the victim. And if you look at all the things that afflict the black community, from AIDS and HIV to poverty to inferior educational ability or academic ability, when you look at everything that afflicts black people because of racism, some kind of way it's been flipped on its head and is now the fault of black people. Now you're blaming black entertainers and black rappers, and I admit, I did it too. But after Gus's show on Obama, I have really, really, really stopped blaming black people as much as I used to, and a lot of the pressure, psychological pressure, is off of me now. Because when I was blaming black people and getting mad at black people, I was actually experiencing a form of self-hatred. So I would have to say it was very much a release for me to stop blaming black people. And now what I do, and we changed it in a book, the blame game section, and now everything that we mentioned is the fault of, is, you know, the blame is the white people in charge. The blame is white people. So I hope I answered that question. I kind of forgot what it was.
A plus. That was what we were talking about before the program. That was beautiful. Nail on the head. Yeah, the only thing that I said is just to add on to that, I would have been in the same boat, and I would have been one of those people. Black people, it's all our fault. Man, if anyone is going to get blamed for the word nigger, I'm starting with Mark Twain. From this day forward, anytime I hear someone, nigger, Mark Twain, maybe Nelly, and all the other so-called hip-hop artists, maybe they got it from Mark Twain. You all have made us read that for a long time. Maybe that's where we got it from. Not Snoop, not DMX. You don't have to listen to, you know, any CDs of DMX to get a high school diploma. You might have to read Mark Twain to get a high school diploma. A lot of people did. So, you know, Mark Twain, 213 times, 213 niggers in The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. So just keep that in mind, that montage at the beginning, white people are to blame for that too. That's all I was going to say.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Maybe every next time we hear a black person use the word nigger, we can say they're having a Mark Twain moment.
I like that. I like that.
Are you having a Mark Twain moment? Because you just called me a nigger. Yeah. Yep.
I'm going to say, I might even start saying that to white people. I might switch up and have, that'll be my response to, you know, a racist comment. If I hear a white paper, almost like Mark Twain. Do you remember that part where they taught niggas just to see what they
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
See, the other person that called in from a block number, did you have a question? Other person, there were two folks that called in from a blocked number. Did you have a question?
Can I be heard?
I heard a female and I heard a male. I heard 909 and I also heard a female.
Can
I like
I be
to.
Heard?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't know my number was blocked. I had a comment regarding what you said earlier. Oh, I'm sorry. Hi, Pam. Hi, Gus. This is my first
Hi.
Time calling the show. Big fan of the show.
Okay.
I actually, ironically, was watching a Tim Wise clip on YouTube yesterday, and it was a clip regarding him using, well, not him, but he was explaining the use of the N-word. And how, that's what it's called, use of the N-word. But he was saying how he wouldn't say nigger at all. And that's a conversation that white people need to have with themselves. And black people using nigger would be basically a conversation that black people would have to have. But later on in the clip, he mentions that Mark Twain's book is actually anti-racist. It doesn't, is not taught as anti-racist in the schools, but he believes that it's anti-racist. And that's actually on YouTube, and I just thought that was funny because you did mention that white people try to say that a satire is supposed to be used to show mistreatment of black people. And this is a so-called white person who is a counter-racist against the use of the N-word, advocating that Mark Twain books are anti-racist. So
Now I'm almost upset because this is one thing I would love to have Tim Wise. I was going to say that. I read this book in 48 hours. I would love to have white people come on the show to talk about this book. Like, I'm really not interested in fussing at other non-white people. I'm in a bad mood. I would much rather take out some of my frustrations on a white person over this book. I would love to have Tim Wise on the show, although I'm sure he wouldn't do it now, Timmy, on the show to discuss this book, particularly if that's the position that he's taking. Because, I mean, in my opinion, it is totally impossible to do that with this book. Like, I don't really know what position you could take to say this is against racism, because I never see an indictment of white people. Like, there's no passage I could read you from the book where there's any condemnation of a white person for the way that they treat black people. And if you don't have that, I mean, this is just a minstrel show in writing, in my opinion.
Isn't that interesting? They even do it in the movies. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just in agreement. I was wondering, I wish he would have elaborated more of how it was so-called anti-racist, especially if he's going on and on about how they shouldn't say the N-word anymore. And, I mean, I read Mark Twain books in high school. I don't really remember them all that much, so I'm actually glad that I was to the show, because I do remember there was a lot of nigger words in it, but that's as far as I can remember. But, I wish he would have elaborated more how that could have been a teaching tool of being anti-racist, because I didn't hear anything anti-racist as Gus was reading it.
It can be a teaching tool. See, that's the thing. Like, that racist will give you some truth, and they'll just connect it to something that's not true. It can be used as a teaching tool. I learned a lot. I am adding Mark Twain to my counter-racist code, but I just don't believe that this is anti-racist. Right. You know, maybe that was his intent, but in my opinion, look at that description. In my opinion, this is someone who is consciously and or unconsciously functioning on the very motivation Tim Wise says is pseudoscientific BS. That is white genetic annihilation. If Mark Twain wrote that, this is someone who is functioning from white genetic annihilation. And I see that total representation in their book, especially The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. Jim does not procreate. He's totally separated from his children and wife for the duration of the book. Black people are not treated as humane. They're not represented as people at all. They're just joke. The only time that they're humanized is when they are relating to another white person, doing something to sacrifice themselves for another white person. So, I mean, I don't know how that could possibly be anti-racist, but I would love to get white people on the show to discuss.
Yeah. You know, it reminds me of that book you had the guest on a while ago, and he had the book about, was it Apocalypse Melanin?
He'll be back Sunday, part two.
Okay. You know, he might be an interesting person to ask, but it seems like when white people deal with racism, they always call themselves having this redemptive moment, you know, where they're actually, the book is anti-racist, but somehow it always gets to black people either being killed and mistreated or not populating. So, you know, I just think that's the phony. I just think that's the phoniness of all this so-called white sensitivity. You know, they're always trying to redeem themselves without actually changing what they do. Just a waste of time.
909, did you have a comment? I wanted to ask the 4635. I was going to ask you something else too. 909, did you have a question, comment?
No, not that important. You can go to 3649.
We were going in order. I mean, you know, if you got a question, we're curious, or comment.
Okay. Yeah, I watch a lot of foreign films, and I definitely I like some martial arts films too, and I know that in a lot of foreign films and martial arts films, and even some books that I've read that spoke on that were more Middle Eastern or like an African narrative, there's no happy ending in a lot of those movies. So my question is that, I mean, you know, in like some martial arts films, everybody dies at the end. And if you ever seen that movie, No Country for Old Men, they get killed, you know, at the end of the movie. It's like the people that were, you thought that would live, they end up dying. So I guess my question is, do you think the book would have been better or more realistic if Nigga Jim would have got turned in, or Huck would have turned him in?
Well, I mean, the thing is, I think this whole book is like racism, white supremacy at its best. Like, this book, alleging to be, right, against slavery and racism, right? And that is in the form of, you know, we are in support of Nigger Jim and getting him out of slavery. Number one, this book came out after slavery. So if you are anti-slavery, this book is way late, like 20 years late to be exact. If even within the context of the book, if we are anti-slavery in the form of we support Jim and we want him to get away, the biggest joke of them all is that Jim is not a slave, which you don't find out until the end of the book. Jim is free. They just have been, you know, this is one great big nigger joke, this whole book. Jim is free from jump. He just doesn't know it. He is the last person to find this out, and white people withhold this information from him purposely. So the whole joke is this is something that is allegedly against slavery, where the person is not actually a slave. Like, it's just total foolishness. And the problem is not slavery. The problem is white supremacy. And I'm even going to add that component. I'm going to borrow from this because they are replacing the term nigger with slave. That's what a white person did. So that, I have to think. Now, anytime a white person references a non-white person as a nigger, are they calling this person a slave? That's very interesting because I hear people call President Obama a nigger. Why are we calling the president a slave? I've never heard the president of the United States referenced as a slave before. That's interesting. What are you telling me about the environment in which I live? Thank you, Mark Twain.
You know, I had that thought, and I never really thought it through, but it crossed my mind too is if nigger now is replaced with the word slave, is now replacement for the word nigger, what are you really saying? That maybe black people have never stopped being in slavery, so let's call them slaves? I don't know.
Did that address your question, 909? I don't think it would work, your question, if Nigger Jim gets caught or what have you. I think this book is set up that that's the whole catch of the book. Jim is not actually a slave, in quotes. He's not actually a slave anymore. So I think it has to go this way of Jim, this whole elaborate plot. And, you know, because, I mean, he does get caught. He does get caught in the book. The white people do catch him. He's, you know, chained up and everything. And then they let him go. So he does get caught in the book. You know, I don't if it just ended with him staying caught, I think that would ruin the whole joke of the book.
Right. And they had to have a redeeming moment for Huckleberry Finn. I mean, if he had done it, then where's the redemptive moment for that white person?
Which it should have been. That's what I'm saying. There needs to be some sort of condemnation. There is none. no white person. There's no white person that you look at and say, man, I do not like this person because he's mistreating black people. That person does not exist. You are totally identified with, relating to, enjoying every racist character in this book.
Well, I'll just say that I know just reading those Mark Twain books, I felt like white people were pretty, like, clever. I mean, the way that, you know, Huckleberry Finn and them, that the way that they can just handle themselves and come up with situations and you know, lie or whatever, just get out of it, everything. It definitely made me think when I was younger reading the stuff that they were very, very clever, very smart, and I definitely wanted to be clever and smart. So that's all.
Don't want to be Nigger Jim.
Yeah.
That's so funny. With the caller 4635, I'm assuming you've heard the show a couple times based on what you said. If you were more confused about white supremacy, do you think if you had seen that video from Mr. Wise that you would have been convinced, like, hey, you know, this Mark Twain guy was years ahead of his time. He was working against racism.
If I were not aware of white supremacy?
Right, if you were more confused about it. Right, if you were more confused about it.
Probably because I really didn't remember too much of what the Mark Twain books were about from when I read it in high school years ago. So I probably would have been like, okay, I need to check this out. You know, your so-called counter-racist is saying that's anti-racist. And the way he set it up in the video, Tim Wise was saying that white people or white teachers don't consider when you have black children reading in class, I'm paraphrasing, it's not exact, but when you have black children reading, black students reading this book in class, that the teachers aren't considering how black people would feel having to read Nigger. They don't even consider a black person's feelings. Just they'll actually recall on you to read that out loud to the rest of the class. And he was saying that even though the book is anti-racist, it's not being taught in schools as being anti-racist.
That's
so to answer your question, yes, I probably would if I was more confused about racism. And honestly, I was probably a bit confused prior to listening to this program about Tim Wise. I only maybe seen Tim Wise once or twice before. I saw him on YouTube, and you know, I'm ashamed to say, I was like, wow, I was like really in awe that you had this white man who was speaking against racism. So, yeah, he just added to my confusion. And it really, this program has really helped me open my eyes to a lot of things that, you know, were subconscious, but I didn't see, just, like you say, confusion.
Mm. Yeah. Mm.
I would just say, real quick, it's not what Gus says that as far as the confusion. I think you have to ask yourself if if you were confused, if it's a fact, is it logical? Because
I didn't say it was anything necessary that Gus said. I said listening to the program.
No, you said as you say confusion.
Okay. Well, I was saying as the terminology is confusion. But I always scrutinize and ask questions for myself. As a matter of fact, when I first began listening to the program, my husband actually introduced me to the show. And I was in a denial and saying that white people aren't all like that. So I wasn't really agreeing with what everybody or with Gus, what he was saying. It actually took me to scrutinize and ask myself honest questions. So I wasn't going just based off of what he said.
Yeah, I understand that. I guess my point was just basically just for everyone and even myself is that just in the way you put it, I just was thinking that it's either true or not. So anyway, I'll leave it there.
You know what? I would
encourage. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'll hang on to that thought. Go ahead.
Oh, I got mine. We got time. Go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to say real quickly, I would like to see all of us become more comfortable, and I'm not speaking for anybody but myself, more comfortable with the word nigga. Nigga is a historical word. It is not something that we should be ashamed of. And frankly, I think even if someone calls you that, you can correct them, but don't get angry. It shouldn't even be, it's not really an insult to us. And I just wanted to read real quick, very, very, very quickly. It only take about less than a minute to read in our book what we call the definition of nigga in a white supremacy system. Number one, nigga is not a racial identity. Number two, all non-white people are niggas by default in a system of white supremacy. Number three, nigga is not a personality defect. Number four, nigga is not a political term. Nigga is a political term that defines a social, economic, and political reality. Number five, a nigga cannot decide who is a nigga and who is not. Number six, all black people are niggas, but all niggas are not black people. Number seven, all non-white people are niggas in a system of white supremacy. Number eight, there is no place on earth called nigger land, therefore niggers are not born niggers, they are created. Number nine, white people cannot be niggas in a system of white supremacy, so don't let them say, I'm a nigger too. Number ten, there is no racial slur for whites that is a social, economic, or political equivalent of nigger in a white supremacy system. Number 11, there is no such thing as acting like a nigger. Number 12, being a nigger has nothing to do with being ignorant, backward, country, poor, or uneducated. Number 13, no amount of education, professional achievements, or fancy table manners would transform a nigger into a white person in a system of white supremacy. Number 14, nigger is not a lifestyle or behavior, it is a condition. Accusing someone of acting like a nigger is like saying, stop acting poor. If you're poor, you act poor. In other words, your behavior reflects your conditions, not your race. Number 15, if we eliminated poverty and white supremacy, there would be no poor folks or niggas. Number 16, niggas should never be a term of endearment. This is like greeting a friend who just lost their job by saying, how are you doing, you out-of-work person? 17, in the absence of white supremacy, niggas would not exist. Number 18, in the absence of white supremacy, there would be no need for niggas. And the last one is number 19, a moral and just society is nigger-proof because there would be no need to invent niggas. So once we understand what a nigger is, we will understand what is a made-up word that does not define who we are. It defines what is being done to us. And I just wanted to get that in because I think black people are still being made to feel uncomfortable about a word we did not make up. White people should be uncomfortable about that word, which is why they want to take it out of the book.
Can you guys hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I guess what this boils down to is a fight between refined racists and less refined racists. I think, like Gus said, white people seem to have an affinity for racist literature, and the less refined racists don't want that literature, that work of art, tainted with. While as the refined racists are saying, you know, we got to backpedal out of this. We got to cover our tracks because if less confused people get hands on this book, we might be in trouble. I actually took an AP class, and we went over this book twice, once when I was in college. I wrote a term paper on it, and once when I was in high school. And when I was in high school, we were in an AP class, two black people in the entire class. And, you know, we read the book aloud. And, I mean, the white teacher would just, you know, put us on the spot all the time, you know. How do you guys feel about uses of the N-word in the book? I'm like, you got a kick. I'm like, you know, and, you know, all the white kids, racists, were reading the book, and and, you know, smiling and giggling and, you know, just really enjoying it. So.
I would love to see how a white professor would respond if a black person, she asked that, how do you feel about it, said, well, you know, under the system of racism, white supremacy, this is what I expect in all areas of people activity. And I would suspect that, you know, a lot of white people would enjoy this sort of material and just, you know, see what that person had to say.
Yeah, I was completely confused in high school. By the time I got to college, like I said, I wrote a term paper on the racism in Huck Finn, but I wasn't quite there yet, so. But that would be an excellent codified response to any teacher covering that subject, man.
Man, we need some after-school workshops, man, straight up, so, because to, you know, to teach racism, white supremacy, so those kind of responses can be made instead of what you normally hear. Oh man, oh I don't like, you know, that's unfit, you know, just crazy responses, man, like the getting emotional and stuff. So, man, I was thinking the same thing as you, Gus, is that, man, just, you know, the teacher expects that some, you know, emotional answer is going to come forth or whatever. It's just, man, I wish, yeah, we need to inform, if we can inform them, man, that would be best.
Yeah, I'm on a quest to get all the non-white people I know to not be offended when they hear the word nigger. If you just frame it in, you know, if you just frame it in context and say, you know, a nigger means a victim of white supremacy, it's more like Pam said, it's more of an indictment on white people than on black people or other non-white people.
And it's still that hidden shame. The reason I think black people get mad is not just because of what the word, you know, this the insult level. It's a sense of shame, as though you have been defined by a word, when in reality that word defines the user, the creator, I should say. You know, so if we get away, we take the quote-unquote the nigger out of the closet and expose it for what it is, we won't be the ones that are uncomfortable, and we won't be ashamed. You don't want to go around calling people that, but it's not a reflection on me. It's a reflection on the creator of the word.
Mm-hmm. I know, like in the Deep South and like in Texas, they were like actually national monuments. One was named Niggerhead Mountain, and the other was named Dead Nigger Creek.
That was the name of the tobacco, Niggerhead Niggerhead Tobacco. That was the name of the tobacco in the book.
Yeah, that's the history.
Well, if I can be heard, speaking of when you were saying with the nigger moment, not calling anyone names, you were speaking of the Green Mile with the role that Michael Clark Duncan was playing, and we still have those moments among us as a people, because when I look around and I'm seeing, because this is the time of the year, it's springtime, and they have these cotillion and these coming out balls and all of this foolishness that black people like to take part in. And I was just the other day, I had some cousins of mine, and they were talking about a debutante ball that they had to go to, sponsored by the Jack and Jill and the Lynx, that they were supposed to be going to. And I'm saying this is ridiculous. These are all white identified things that white people do. And now black people feel it because they have some money and a little bit of position, that they have to continue doing the same thing, the same foolishness that white people do.
I have a question to anybody that's on the line. When I graduated from high school probably 11, 12 years ago, and when they had us read Huckleberry Finn, when they had us watch Gone with the Wind, because my teacher had us watch Gone with the Wind for a period of 3 days, at that particular time, they weren't trying to hide the fact that they were openly saying nigger and they were openly racist back, well, they're openly racist now. But why is it now that they want to take that word out of the books opposed to before? All my white teachers were saying, well, that's just the history. It was just historical. So why has that changed now? It's still history. It's still historical. So why are they trying to cover it up now opposed to before?
As Pam was saying, it's refinement. They're refining the system, and they're trying to get more on the cover. They're trying to get more hidden because a lot of their secrets have been shown out. So now they are trying to go deeper on the cover, and this is their way of doing it. I went to school in the North, so I never had to read any of those books, nor I never had to watch any Gone with the Wind. That's the difference with going to school in the North versus going to school in the South. Where they go through this still, they're still fighting the Civil War, and they're going through all of that foolishness. So it was news to me when I was here that Gus was saying that they had to read this book as a part of their class project. I never had to read any of those books when I was going through high school, middle school, or elementary school.
That's the irony. I was supposed to be in a supposed progressive area with the school in Las Vegas, Nevada, where it's supposedly, you know, no racism. So, wasn't according to, you know, every is a melting pot. But, yeah, they had us read all of that. And prior to that, I went to school in elementary school in Ohio.
I have a quote here. It says, "He who controls the present controls the past. He who controls the past controls the future."
By George Orwell, 1984. Yes, sir.
Oh yeah, they had us read that too.
Yes, sir. You might want to pay attention in class. White people read those books for a reason. I would highly encourage folks, read those books. I do not want them to take Huckleberry Finn out of the school or 1984. Just, you know, be informed about white supremacy when you do.
I never had to read. I don't know what y'all were going to school, because I never had to read 1984 or any of those Orwellian books. So I guess when I went to school in Pennsylvania, I could say maybe I was fortunate, maybe I was not, that I didn't have those experiences.
You know, in answer to the caller's question about why now are they taking, you know, trying to take it, the certain books or certain words out of certain books, there is a parallel that's a little disturbing. And pretty much during when the Nazis seized power, they began censoring, and books were one of the first casualties. There's a statement here by the Minister of Education during the Nazi regime. He said, saw the purpose of school books was to achieve the ideological education of young German people so as to develop them into fit members of the national community. So they used the school books for propaganda. And to me, that signals that there's a shift coming in American society, and that these, you know, rewriting the history and whitewashing the history, to me signals that there's going to be a shift and that they're actually repeating some similar patterns that they had in the past. So that's something we need to be aware of. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing in Nazi Germany. I'm sorry.
I think that Dr. Cambon was talking about the importance of context, and this is what I see this as. I don't even want them to take the word nigga out of the book. I think that non-white parents should just be on their job about informing their kids about this before they read it. But, yeah, I mean, they're removing context from the book. So now a lot of things could just be, you know, attributed to, you know, just Jim's foolishness or buffoonery. You know, these white people don't hate them. They don't call them nigger. So, you know, now it's just, it kind of makes Jim end up looking worse than he already does. And I guess it's just like, and if they could do this, then, you know, who says that they can't, you know, whitewash Jim Crow out of history either, or, you know, anything like that. So, removal.
This is how it happens. This is how you remove context. This is the exact way you remove context.
Right. Well, that answer, that what Pam said makes the most sense to me, because it wasn't that long ago. It seemed like they were so proud and so happy to have you read Huckleberry Finn and all the niggers in it, and watch Gone with the Wind and 1984 and everything else that they had me read in that class, which I have to mention was an AP class by a white racist woman, and she was blatantly racist. She didn't even want me in her class, period. Told me that I wasn't intelligent enough to be in her class.
You're reinforcing what Dr. Cambon as well as Dr. Johnson was stating about white female teachers are the most dangerous teachers that they have out there, especially when it comes to young black male. Because if you were in her classroom and you were a black female, black non-white female, and she felt that way about you, imagine how she felt towards non-white males, especially if they were black.
Oh, she made it known. She was a blatant white supremacist. She didn't really hide it. Well, she tried to, but it wasn't successful. But she taught AP classes, honors classes, as well as what you call regular classes, and the regular classes are predominantly black. And she would openly talk about how she felt that the people in the regular classes were less intelligent and they didn't grasp the concepts, they didn't understand. And being that I came from a so-called regular class, I transferred myself into an honors class, she was saying that I couldn't handle the curriculum, I couldn't handle the work, and I wasn't intelligent enough. And then on top of that, I have to read Huckleberry Finn and watch Gone with the Wind and 1984 and whatever other foolishness she had us reading. But she was very blatant. She would talk about how she was studying so-called black English, which back at that time they coined the phrase Ebonics. And every time she would say anything that was black-related, she always made it a point to look directly at me, to the point that there was a young white lady who used to sit next to me, and she'd be like, well, why is she looking at you every time she says anything about black people? And I said, that's a good question. Anytime she said anything, Oprah, anything. So she was pretty blatant. She was a...
Right.
I'm sorry.
Oh, that was my fault. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I'm finished.
You don't mind me asking, how old were you when you were in that class?
I was 16 or 17.
Did you let
Real
your
young.
Parents?
Yeah, not even an adult. Please.
Get on your job. Got to talk to your children about racism, white supremacy in the womb. Like, I mean, you got to be on your job because white people are definitely going to be on their job. I wanted to throw this in really quick because I asked Dr. Kevorkian because he has a doctorate in English, so I knew, you know, he would be a good resource to ask about this. And he did send me a couple articles about this and white people saying that this is racist. The quick thing I wanted to toss in, number one, they point out a key passage from this book, All You Need to Know About It, in my opinion. On page 279, it says, this is Huck talking to a white woman, and he's lying to her. He says, I struck an idea and fleshed it out. It weren't the grounding that didn't keep us back. But a little, we blowed out a cylinder head. Good gracious, anybody hurt? No, ma'am. Killed a nigger. Well, it's lucky, because sometimes people do get hurt. And they go on, and the person who wrote this article, white person, says, first, Twain's use of nigger is profoundly racist. We can't say, as too many critics have done, that it's just slang, a poor, ignorant boy's way of saying African-American. What Huck means is far worse than what a racist means by WAP or Mick. Huck is saying that a nigger is a no one. That's the joke in response to the straight man query, anybody hurt? If we're alert, the negation form serves to highlight the positive charge of killed. especially because of the pause indicated by the sentence. He goes on to break this down, and he also points out that the casual use of the word nigger is fundamental to this book, and he points out that this didn't really become a problem, the use of the term nigger. It didn't become an issue with this book until the 1960s. This book was taught for decades, and the only gripe that people had was about class, and they thought that the characters did a lot of crude and rude things, stealing and cursing, the language. Those were the first gripes about this book. Nothing related to racism, just it had a lot of crude behavior in it that they didn't think should be emulated. It took about 30 or 40 years before people said, oh, yeah, maybe we shouldn't be teaching this book since it's got all these niggers in it. Interesting commentary. Got that from Dr. Kevorkian. I'll hush, and we'll be back tomorrow. Justice. Oh, I'll play Justice's. That'll be my final word. I'll play Justice's commercial, and then there'll be 10 minutes left. If you have you all want to share anything before the program wraps up, I'll make sure I get her commercial in before I lose the switchboard.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the couch. This is Justice here at Block Talk Radio. If you want to learn, listen, understand, and question, go to blocktalkradio.com/victim-of-racism. And for more information on racism, white supremacy, go to my blog, justdojusticetoday.blogspot.com. My email address is justice.asap@yahoo.com. Replace white supremacy with justice. ASAP.
You're just saying just buckets and buckets of words.
Yeah. To the caller who said that the AP teacher was hostile to you, I just graduated from high school about 6 years ago, so around the same time as you. And I noticed the same thing. And I guess what I would say is that I think that in the so-called regular classes, even though these books, racist books, are covered, they're not as covered as in as much detail. And I think that may be part of the reason why teachers in the AP classes do not want black students in them. And when they do get in them, they pretty much try to marginalize them at every given point. I noticed some of the same behaviors from my AP English teacher in 11th grade towards me and a black female. So just pointing that out, that that's a valid observation.
Could you plug the show, sir, Reckless 2.0?
Yes, sir, Reckless 2.0. You were correct. We did a program yesterday with Mr. Buzz Bissinger about the article White Man Can't Root, dealing with white racism, white racism, white supremacy in the NBA. I'm not sure when we'll be back. We have a couple of interviews we're trying to set up. So,
speaking of what the caller was stating that had the problem with the AP class and the racist teacher, this is the reason why we as parents, we have to be informed about our children and make periodic visits to their classes to see what's going on with them. When my son was in high school, I always made it a point to go to their classes. Back in those days, you could make unannounced visits. Now with these things, you have to go through the airport screening and go to the principal's office and get a pass and do all of those things. But back in those days, especially in elementary school, you can just go to the class and just walk by the room and just look in to see how they were doing. Because we're turning over our children to the school system, and we're just leaving it like that, and we're not doing any follow-ups. And in your particular case, did you ever speak to your parents and let them know what you were going through with this particular teacher?
You know what? I didn't. I should have. I just knew at that time. Because actually, I was the one who got myself in the class. I had a counselor. He wasn't helping me. The counselor actually happened to be black. I wanted to actually challenge myself more because I wanted to go to a college or whatnot. So, and I knew that the classes that I was in, I wasn't challenged enough. So I actually put myself in her classes. So for some reason, no, I didn't express that to my father at that particular time. I just kind of took it. I observed it. I knew what it was. I wasn't ignorant about it. I definitely observed her behavior towards me.
I just want to get this in real quick. I think that you were basically imitating what you had learned from black adults. Black adults keep white people's secrets. We tell our children by omission that we're supposed to not talk about racism. So I think that a lot of it has to do with black adults not being honest and not prepping our kids about racism. And they learn that we're not comfortable with it, so they don't talk about it. So we're just passing along the curse of keeping white people's secrets. That's why I think you didn't tell, because you knew somehow that it was not the thing that you should be doing. I don't know. I could be wrong.
And now that you mentioned that, I actually did have another experience when I was younger, because I actually used to live with my mother, and then I lived with my father. When I was in high school, I was living with my father. When I lived with my mother, she was very much involved going to schools, and there was a teacher. He was a white teacher. He actually wanted to hold me back a grade. So she went to school to try to find out what was going on. She said, she said he's prejudiced. So she actually pulled me out of that school. That school was actually a predominantly white elementary school, and actually moved so I can go to a different school where they actually put me in an advanced class. So that was probably my very first. That's probably why I recognized it when I actually got into high school, because I already experienced something like that. So I didn't say anything. And Pam, I agree with you. But my father, I didn't really discuss that with him. If it was my mother, I probably would have.
The program is going to end in 3 minutes. If you all feel like this is constructive and you would like to continue the dialogue, I can extend. You'll have to hang up and dial back in. If you all are good, that's fine. But if you want to continue, we can. One of the few times you'll have an option.
Yes, Gus, this sounds like this is very good, especially with the school situation, because we're seeing what's going on with the school system as well as with the immigration bill, because here in Georgia, they're already starting to do the immigration bill where they want to put it into law about you have to have at least one parent born in the U.S. if you're one of these non-white illegals in order for your child to have citizenship. So this is something that is ratcheting up, and it's going all along the southern as well as the border states.
Yes, sir. It's the northern state, because Ohio is where I had my first experience with the white teachers. I would argue that it's probably almost all the states.
Okay. You'll have to hang up and dial back in. So when the program ends, just dial back in, and it should work. And we can continue the dialogue, because I agree, the school situation is very important. So, we're all set. Just dial back in. I think there's like 90 seconds left in this program.
I had an almost identical situation to the female that just spoke. when I was in middle school and I got recommended for high school classes, all of my middle school teachers recommended me for all advanced classes in high school. And whoever the administrators were in high school just, you know, revoked all of those recommendations, put me back in all regular classes except for math, because they couldn't do anything about that. But, so I had a similar situation with a black guidance counselor, and that's how I got into AP English 11. And, did you have another non-white person in the class with you? Because I think that's kind of how I cope without actually telling my parents.
I had one, but he wasn't helpful with that. I pretty much probably was the only black person in there, for lack of a better term.
I was in AP English, too. We read this book in AP English. Hadn't thought about that in a while. Wow.
Do we call back now?